sweet baby Jesus, we are back again. Satisfaction, relief, tension, fulfilled. Exploded, whatever. Listen, San Diego, you fucking savages were off the chain this weekend. I want to thank the fuck out of every one of you. It was amazing. That was one of my favorite shows ever in San Diego. Even with hecklers, it was great. It was just a couple douchebags. Somebody booed Joey.
What?
Booed Joey Diaz when he got on stage. I think it's the same guy who heckled me later. He yelled out, bullshit. It's just some poor dude who probably signed up for the Army when he was 18.
Yeah.
Something.
There's a lot of those down there.
But the audience was fucking incredible. It's just... God damn, I love San Diego. That is like one of the most underrated all-time cities. It really is.
Yeah.
The place is incredible.
Except for their weed fear.
Well, it's because of the military thing. I mean, they definitely have an issue with marijuana down there. They shut down all the shops. There's military everywhere down there. It's crazy if you have military and weed, because then they start getting high and going, let's just run to Mexico, man. It's right there. Let's get out of here. Fuck this, dude. I don't want to shoot anybody anymore. Anyway. Thanks, everybody. Fucking fantastic show. This weekend, Montreal sold out, bitches. Ooh. Suck it. No tickets. Tough shit.
You always sell out in Canada. You should probably just get super big.
I should probably just move there. That's what I should probably do. Canada is fucking awesome. Even in November in Montreal with Duncan Trussell, we are going to be there, and eventually see Georges St-Pierre going to fight Carlos Condit. Ooh. Oh, shit, son. What a wild weekend that will be. This podcast, ladies and gentlemen, is brought to you by Ting. Ting, one of our newest sponsors. And what Ting is, ladies and gentlemen, is a fair and ethical mobile company. What do I mean by that? They don't have all the goofy fucking laws or rules, rather, set in place by a lot of these cell phone companies, especially the one that really bites my ass. And that's the one where you have to pay money if you want to cancel your contract. That shit to me is ridiculous. That's like going to the supermarket and saying, I want to buy milk, and them saying, well, if you want milk, you got to pay for your milk every day. And when you no longer want to pay milk for milk, we have to get some extra money from you. That's how I look at it. I don't look at cell phone services any other kind. It's a good. You're selling goods, just like you're selling milk to me. Maybe my logic is faulty. And if you were smart, don't get me wrong, and you were sitting here and you wanted to argue that point with me, you'd probably win. But my point is, it doesn't make any sense. I know why they do it. The reason why they do it, it's kind of tricky. Like when you buy a cell phone from Verizon and it says $300. It's the phone costs more than $300, so they sort of tack that money onto your bill, and then if you try to cancel early, then you have to like make up the difference and pay for what the phone really would have been. Like phones, like a good iPhone or something, is really fucking expensive.
It's like $600 to $700.
Ting doesn't have that set up. The way Ting works is, you want to cancel, just fucking cancel. If you don't use all your minutes, like say if you have a higher plan with more minutes and you don't use it, they automatically bump you down to the next plan in your next bill and save you money. Like, it is a very, very fair and ethical company. And they work off this Sprint backbone. So they have excellent cell phone service. Joey Diaz has Sprint. He's had Sprint for years. If you try to take Sprint away from Joey Diaz, he will fucking stab you.
Give it back to me, cocksucker.
Yeah, fucking Sprint, cocksucker. My shit never goes out. I make calls from the fucking plane in the air. He got a phone call in the air once. I don't know how he did it, but we were sitting there and his fucking phone. Joey never turns his phone off. You know how they say turn your phone off on a plane? He's never turned it off once. He doesn't do it.
I always try to like turn it on like about 20 minutes before you land and see if I can get service. And a lot of times you can.
A lot of times planes crash and people die. You fuck, you fucking techno weirdo. Go to rogan.ting.com. They will give you $50 off of your first Ting device. And the devices are all top of the line. They have a bunch of sick fucking Android phones, including the one that I have, the Samsung Galaxy 3, which I love. And I have raved about this phone. It is very hard to go back to an iPhone after you see that big, giant, luscious Samsung Galaxy S3 screen. And by the way, they just outsold iPhones for the first time ever. So the Galaxy S3 right now is the number one selling cell phone in America.
You know why?
Yeah, because fucking the Chinese can't make the iPhone 5s quick enough. And they're rioting. That's what it is.
Yeah, I know it is.
That's the truth.
Right.
Oh, I would tell the truth, man. Look, Samsung did get that official lead, though. You know what I'm saying? It's like when James Irvin blew out his knee.
It's because they use American workers, right, Joe?
Exactly.
No, they don't.
Nope. I don't know if there's an ethical cell phone to buy, folks. There's certain shit in this day and age you're going to have to ignore. Unless you get a cell phone made in Montana out of fucking deer antlers and old scrap. I don't think they fucking sell.
Joe, should I just pay for one of these Ting phones? Should I just not wait for these guys? Because they're obviously not, you know, listening to this.
Maybe they're like down with the Wikipedia people. Wikipedia people do not want to recognize Brian Redban as an official celebrity. And I say that's bullshit because they recognize a lot of people that are less famous than you.
Porn stars. Every single porn star is in there.
There's something that's about they are not accepting this medium. And this is a... You fuckheads better come correct. This is a legitimate medium, this internet.
Look at this. I was in the newspaper.
He was in the newspaper. Sort of. It looks like Doug Benson to me. But, you know, whatever, buddy. I'm sure they printed your name.
Can I say something? He looks like a missing child. Like, have you Benson? Seen this boy?
Yeah.
Oh, are you help me.
Benson,
honey.
He went down to Tijuana to buy Valiums, and we never saw him again. anyway, go to rogan.ting.com. That's our sponsor. Onnit.com is one of our other sponsors. Onnit has got a bunch of new shit in, folks. We finally got that. We're selling that video that I used to talk about even back in the day before Onnit, the extreme kettlebell cardio workout.
Yeah.
We started selling that. It's amazing. We also started selling BlendTech blenders, which I just started using a couple of weeks ago. I used to use a Vitamix, which is badass. It's a very good blender. But the BlendTech is even better. It's incredible how much it just liquefies everything. It's the most amazing blender that I've ever used. We were selling it and giving away free hemp force protein powders,
right?
But BlendTech won't let us do that anymore. It's like a violation of the... Because
really?
We sell it really cheap anyway, yeah. We sell it for $200 less, more than $200 less than the manufacturer suggested retail price.
Oh, so they're like, you can't sell that because then the competitors
They don't have that advantage of getting the free hemp force.
Wow.
We give away a free hemp force.
You know what you should do? You should have a coupon code that just, if you happen to buy a blender, you can put this coupon code in and it adds it for you. So it's, you're not selling it with it. But
yeah, I still think that's...
There's loopholes.
We sell it as long... Maybe. Look at you. What are you, a marketing genius?
Yes.
There's loopholes. He's going to get us sued, this fuck. He doesn't even care. Hemp Force is another product of Onnit, and I had some this morning. It's the most delicious protein powder on earth. It's made out of the... Everything at Onnit is... What Onnit is like essentially a supplement company, a health, nutrition, fitness company. Everything we sell is literally the best shit we can find. We said, what is the best blender? They said, BlendTech. Boom. We got a BlendTech. I didn't even have one when we did that deal. We did it because of these videos where you see a BlendTech blender blend a fucking iPhone into powder.
Why would you do that?
Because they're amazing. Because they just want to show you how wicked. Maybe it was like an old phone. Yeah. My phone is dying, man.
Really?
I got my new one's supposed to be on the way.
A 5?
Yeah.
I got
a 5.
Welcome.
About time. It's the Samsung Galaxy S3, son.
I don't know. I wouldn't know about that.
Yeah,
Ting does not listen to the commercials.
Ting, what the fuck, Ting? You're paying for these commercials. Get Brian Redban a cell phone.
Ting's butt smells.
New Mood is another product of Onnit.com. That's a fascinating product. It's a 5-HTP and L-tryptophan product with actually, by calling it New Mood, that's like it's really a legit name for it because it actually does change your mood. It boosts your brain's output of serotonin. It has two factors. The way it's explained to me with my feeble, non-scientific mind is that one is 5-HTP, which converts to serotonin, and there's also L-tryptophan, which converts to 5-HTP, which converts to serotonin. So it gives you like a time-released effect, as it's been explained to me. But what I do know is the stuff really works. It's great right before bed. It makes you feel better. Your brain is concocted of a bunch of different shit. And we know that there's certain chemicals, especially when you're dealing with vitamins and supplements. You're not dealing with anything dangerous. There's no drugs. It's not an SSRI. But it has a very similar effect. In fact, a lot of people who are taking antidepressants, which essentially raise your brain's output of serotonin, the doctors tell you not to take 5-HTP as well. They tell you that it's too much of it. You'll literally develop too much serotonin. What that says to me, I'm not a doctor, but it says to me is that you should be... I have to tell you I'm not a doctor. I think that's a Dom Herrera joke. Dom, I didn't steal your joke, Dom.
What's going on?
I think... It's telling you that you can get there with nutrition as well. And I think with nutrition and exercise, there's a lot of people that feel like shit that would feel a lot better, David Tell. I'm just saying. I'm just saying.
What now?
Put away the cigarettes. Get on it. O-N-N-I-T. Use the code name Rogan and save yourself 10% off the number one supplement for men or something like that. This is my new T-shirt. This is the gas mask chimpanzee higher primate T-shirt. You can't see it.
Yeah, but now you know for the rest of the podcast.
Yeah, now you know for the rest of the podcast what the fuck I'm wearing. But we have three new designs in at Higher Primate. And there's also... What are you laughing at, man? It's not funny.
Am I allowed to talk or no?
Oh, yeah.
You can do whatever the fuck you want, son. You're Dave Attell.
No, I was going to say, what's the difference between the serotonin and the melatonin?
Melatonin is what puts you to sleep.
Yeah.
Melatonin is what relaxes you and puts you to sleep. Yeah, that's great before sleep, too.
Yeah.
Serotonin is what actually makes you feel happy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like dopamine, serotonin.
Is that taking the wrong one?
Oh, shit. Just sleepy
now,
all the time.
Now I get it. Okay.
Well, you have like a little tip to your filter, like a little... This is Hunter S. Thompson for 2012. Yeah, yeah.
You want to shoot Lugers out in the parking lot?
I would love to.
Is that for your teeth? Is that why you do it?
I do it for my teeth, and I'm also trying to stop smoking. So, like, I figure the further I get away from the cigarette, the more I will...
You need to get a real legit
I need, like,
Hunter
actually someone to
one.
Smoke it for me, and I just do the second hand. But, yeah. You guys are very fucking observant.
Yeah, we're on top of the ball. That's not the way you're supposed to say it. We're on the ball. We say we're on top of the
ball.
We're on
top of the ball. Humping it.
Fucking show, ladies and gentlemen. It doesn't start until I hear music. It doesn't officially start until Brian cues the track. And then we move.
Joe Rogan Podcast. Check it out.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan Podcast by night. All day.
Powerful Dave Attell.
What's up?
My brother. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Joe, man.
Dude, this please. It's a pleasure.
Every time I come to L.A., I'm always hoping, like, can I hang with Joe? And we're doing it. Thank you.
Thank you for doing it, man. No. You know, it's one of the coolest things about being a professional comedian is you get to hang out with other professional comedians.
Yes.
You know, I talked to Stanhope once, and he was drunk, of course. And He was just like, got back from the road, and he was like, you know what, man? He goes, I could quit stand-up, but I couldn't quit hanging out with stand-ups.
Yeah,
that's how I feel, too, man. I mean, it's we're so lucky that we have – I couldn't imagine if I had to deal with like – if I had just worked with a bunch of people who weren't funny and hung out with only a bunch of people who weren't funny.
Oh, it would drag. Oh. It'd be such a drag.
Is there anything worse than non-funny people?
Well, I just know that every time I talk to Doug, who we both think is amazing,
yeah,
he's – half in the bag, and he's at an airport bar. He's like the last yeah. airport bar drunk I know in America.
Yeah, so. He doesn't play. I don't, by the way, the people who aren't funny don't get offended. I don't mean if you're yeah, not. I mean exactly. If you're not funny and you try to be funny. That's what I mean. Mm-hmm. There's nothing worse than that. If you're not funny, you just got to accept that shit. Although that's bullshit, really, because how the fuck do you ever become funny? I mean, everyone was not funny at one time.
Yeah, well, you know? I think so now really, it's harder. I'm a hypocrite. It's harder because of the phones. Everybody's on their phone all the time. So there's like very little connection. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's like looking at stuff and tweeting.
You think it's harder to be funny today than it was back in the day?
I don't know. I think that like for me personally, my funny stemmed from a lot of awkward situations where I was like, how the fuck am I going to get out of this?
Right.
And then like, I said something and they laughed and then I fucking bolted. So I don't know about you, but that really helped me in my earlier years of like, hey, it's good to have a sense of humor, you know? Yeah. And then unless you can become a comic, then you realize there's other guys like that, you know? Yeah. And then like, you know, we kind of all gel together. And we also have like a perspective on things that a lot of other people don't. Like a lot of people are looking for like happiness and fulfillment and closure. And
yeah.
I think as a comic, you kind of like roll with the way things are and just see the humor in it, you know?
Yeah.
So
I also, at this point, I feel like I have this a massive obligation to continue to put out material. You know, when you have fans and you really appreciate them and they tell you, oh my God, we have the best time. We love you. You know, Keith, don't ever stop doing this. Like, wow. All right, I can't stop. I work harder because of it. I mean, I used to not believe that when people used to say that, you know, that they do it for their fans. But you really have to. That's the only way you can do it. You got to do it for them.
Well, how cool is it when a guy comes up to you and says, like, dude, I love this joke, or like, you know, you didn't do that joke that I love, and like, it's like joke that you like, and you're like, oh man, there is a reason to do this.
Yeah.
Somebody's listening, you know, I like that.
Do you still love stand-up, the art form? Do you still like watching it?
Well, you know, I think we went to this last time. It's like, I don't consider myself an artist. I mean, I consider pretty much everybody else I know an artist to some degree, but I have very few tools in my toolbox, and one of them is midget and dick jokes, and that tool has really been used a lot. So.
It doesn't matter.
I don't know. I feel like I'm more tricky than I am, like, funny, and, like, I do take a lot of chances, but I don't really – I don't know. I feel like after doing it 26 years that I should have it more together than I do, and I don't, you know?
You know, Stanhope used you as an example in saying why. There was someone
what
was
not to do.
Teaching, someone was teaching a comedy class, and he was talking about how confidence is like one of the most important things. You have to know you're funny. And then he used you as an example. He said, that is the dumbest fucking example ever. It's not true. There's no like hard, fast rules, because look at Attell. You know, he's
not funny.
Brilliant and never believes it.
I don't. Yeah,
you don't believe it, but you're one of my favorite comedians.
Well, I really come at it from the point of, like, I work really off of negativity. So I think that that's kind of like my zone. That's
so
where, like, my power, my, you know, Iron Man fucking thing in my chest.
So you have to hate even your own act in order for it to work.
There's so much hate. I have to fly in a day early to pick up all the hate that I know I haven't.
What does that come from? What does it all come from?
I don't know. I mean, it's like, you know, first of all, like, you know, it's kind of a great gig if you do hate yourself, because you're alone so much. Like, standing in front of an airport chain smoking in, like, 30-degree weather, San Francisco, where I was, there's nothing but, like, reevaluating your life, your act, you know, the mistakes, all that kind of shit. So I think it's, like, perfect for me, you know? I mean, I don't know how you roll with, like, a very cool crowd of, like, excellent fans. Really, you know, you call your own shots, and I just look up to you, man. I mean, I bow to you, but I'd probably end up blowing you. So.
Well, that's ridiculous, because I
too early in the podcast,
too, man. You're one of my favorite comedians. There's only a few guys that I will go out of my way to see, and you're certainly one of them.
Oh, thanks, man.
But one of the things that we do different than anybody else is that we go on the road with each other. Like, we bring, like, if we go on the road, it's Brian, it's me, it's Ari, it's Duncan, it's Joey. Mm-hmm. You know, we bring our, it's a family.
That's essentially a
family. Yeah. So if we go to eat, I mean, we go to eat a fucking 1,000 times a year. You know, it's normal.
Yeah, that's great.
Mostly all Fogo de Chao.
Yeah, we've eaten at Fogo de Chao's in almost every city in the country. You know those Brazilian steakhouses? Have you ever eaten at Fogo de Chao?
No, I've never. Hit me to it. What is it?
Oh, it's the most amazing creation of culinary excellence. Mm-hmm. They give you like a little puck, like a hockey puck looking thing.
Of meat.
No. This is a, it's
like a
chip.
Coaster.
Like, yeah, coaster, yeah. Okay. And it's green on one side and red on the other side. And when it's green, they keep coming with the meat.
I've been to one of those, but in Brazil.
In Brazil, yeah. It's called a churrascaria.
Wow.
Yeah. And they come with just fucking skewers of meat that's cooked over open flames.
So I didn't know you were a meat guy. I thought you were, like, you know, like, very organic and, you know, all that kind
of
stuff.
Well, I eat mostly grass-fed meat.
Okay.
My goal is to ultimately eat grass-fed meat and game. I want to
game,
eat
really?
Wild game.
Yeah, like, what would be your ultimate healthy animal to eat? Like, of all the animals that ever lived.
Deer, delicious.
No, but of all the ones that ever lived.
Oh, like, if I could go back in time.
Yeah, like a dinosaur or
something. I would like to have a dinosaur steak. Could you imagine what a T-Rex steak would be like? Like T-Rex tenderloins?
Pterodactyl wings?
Well, you can eat alligators.
Yeah.
I mean, people eat alligators on a regular basis.
The swamp people.
Oh, yeah.
They eat it all the time for breakfast.
And I've had it. It's not bad. It's not. They say it tastes like chicken. It definitely.
It tastes like
alligators. Yeah. That's what alligator tastes like.
It's like evil, just swampy.
It's an evil fucking.
It's a dinosaur, isn't it?
Angry monster.
Yeah. It's like the panda of the dinosaurs.
They're 200 million years old in that shape. They haven't changed.
Wow.
So they existed more than 130 years before the big asteroid hit that killed all the dinosaurs. They had already been around 130 million years in this form that we see them wandering around. They're like the rats of the water world, the lizard world.
Yeah, they'll eat anything, right?
Oh, they'll
just eat anything.
They're monsters. What's even scarier than them is that they got pythons in Florida.
Yeah.
Like, going through the alligator areas now.
Feral, wild.
Yeah. And now the pythons have started eating alligators.
Oh, shit. You know, I'd love to see that. Now, that would be an ultimate
fight. He's got a photo. Pull up the python eating the alligator. We've talked about this in the podcast before because it's just the most crazy thing ever. These snakes have no natural predators.
I would have bet on the alligator.
See, I would have thought so, too. I thought no matter how big the fucking snake is, it's not going to eat an alligator.
Yeah, exactly. And snake is like all just fucking nothing. No bones,
but
no
they're
nothing.
So, snakes are so gangster.
Yeah.
Snakes do not give a fuck.
And
they
python,
sneak up on an alligator.
He's not poisonous. He's just a wrapper. He wraps around you.
Crushes you and bites you.
That's the point.
Look at that. See that? That's a 20-foot python with the alligator coming out of its body.
My God.
The tail burst through the body, and the thing died.
Oh, fuck.
Look at the size of that thing. That thing is fucking enormous. I mean, it's really hard to imagine how big that must be in real life. If you were out there on that water, it's wide around like a man's waist. It's fucking huge.
If I, that would be the ultimate like Christmas card to send to somebody you hate. Thinking of you.
May your alligator your get eaten by something. A python.
Your agent.
Yeah. Your agent. It's, we have this weird thing about keeping those fucks alive, too. There's these people in Florida right now that are working really hard to bring back the crocodile, the American crocodile.
Well, isn't that the alligator?
No, crocodile's a different species. It's more aggressive.
Oh.
They have a longer, pointier snout, and they're more aggressive and explosive. And one of them just ate a dog in the Keys, in the Florida Keys.
That
just
is the worst.
Pulled a dog off a dock.
Losing a dog to a croc, that's got to be the worst.
A monster.
But in Australia, that's going to happen like every three minutes or something.
Well, they have scarier crocs. They have the big crocs. American crocs are not that big.
What isn't scary in Australia?
Yeah, right?
I mean, really, honestly. You go in the ocean, there's the great white. You're hanging out, there's an alligator. Then there's the dogs, the dingoes.
Yeah.
Wow, it just stinks.
Yeah, Australia. And you can only live in a certain part of it.
Yeah, exactly. The whole middle kind of sucks.
The whole middle's death. It's just fucking the bush. It's just death.
But that, what a great place to disappear. There's got to be like no cell phone service there.
Yeah, if you wanted, if you were like some dude who could survive and you were down with trying to live in the woods, like, you could escape to Australia and they wouldn't even go looking for you. They'd be like, pfft.
Well, Joe, man, I was in the New York during the Hurricane Sandy, and we were talking this a little bit before the show, but like, you got a doomsday prep. I mean, like, unfortunately, I prepped for the wrong doomsday.
Right. But, which one did you prep for?
I don't know. Invasion of clowns. I don't know. Like, I prep for a good one. A good one, but annoying. Like, clowns would be everywhere, and we have to fight them off with, like, water guns and stuff
condom
like that.
Wrappers.
Yeah, that's exactly. Hilarious. But this was, like, just fucking, it was, like, apocalyptic. It really was.
That's hilarious.
I mean, no
did
power.
Did you expect it to be like that, or was it way crazier than you expected?
You know, the thing about New York, though, is since 9/11, like, our first responders are, like, top-notch. They really, like, step up. They know what to do. They got plans and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But nobody, I guess, expected, like, New York City tsunami, like, wave hitting us, knocking out power for, like, 2 weeks. And then there's, like, Staten Island and Jersey, where they got it even harder. But you take the power out of New York City and you got Somalia, basically. It's just a freaky, weird, scary town, you know?
Yeah, it's really strange when you see how easy the film that covers civilization can be removed and people
power.
Are savage. It just becomes
absolutely.
Survival. You really have to worry about survival because the first responders are excellent. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, they're
but
great.
They're overwhelmed. There's just the sheer numbers impossible to deal with.
There was parts of the city where like I was just walking around and it was just dark and like guys would roll up on you like you can't see them. And I'm pretty good like knowing what's happening. Mm-hmm. And guys would roll up on me and I'm like, whoa, this is like a Chuck Norris. You know that scene in every Chuck Norris movie where he's like in the factory?
Right.
And it's like,
right.
You know, a box knocks over.
Yeah.
It was like that kind of thing. Like just weird, scary faces and just sounds. And
yeah,
stuff.
What is it like to walk around a street at night with no
gun.
Lights on at
Say
all?
Say it. No gun.
No gun.
I was like, fuck, what am I going to fight him with? Sarcasm? What's going on here?
So you were walking like to where you had to go, to and fro in your neighborhood, and there was no lights on for days.
No lights. Where I lived, there was lights. But when we did shows at the Comedy Cellar, which is in the Village, they had no lights up until almost the last day. And we were doing shows to generators, which is kind of cool in a way, but bad because it went out when I was on. But it went out, and all these flashlights and candles started popping out of the crowd. It was like that scene in Requiem for a Dream. You know that scene like where they're like ass to ass, the flashlights on the chick and all that kind of stuff. So it was really a freaky show, but it was a good show. But when you're walking around the streets, you're like, okay, this is like, you know, what can I fight whoever comes at me with a weapon? And there's a lot of like homeless people coming off of their meds too. So there's like, they have like the extra evil in them, you know?
Oh, that's right. Because they can't get their meds because there's no power.
Yeah, it was like zombie style.
It was zombie. It was Walking Dead kind of shit.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's scary as fuck. Now, was there a lot of that? Like, was there a lot of muggings? Was there a lot of?
I think there was. There was some looting. There was some whatever. But it wasn't like Katrina, because I talked to guys who were in Katrina, and they're like, you know, everybody's like, this is our Katrina. It's like, fuck no. This is like Katrina was like the end of the earth. That was the end of the world there. That was like weeks and weeks and weeks, no help, you know, and no power, and it was hot and all that stuff. In New York, it was a little bit better than that, that's for sure. So
it's better than that, but it's still
–
it lets you know what can go wrong in the biggest city in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
And when that happens, when the biggest city in the world gets essentially shut down for two weeks, that's a real eye-opener.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, like people trying to get into the city, and they had to do, you know, like buses, and all the trains were like – exactly like somebody should have kayaked through these tunnels just to do it, like to say like I did it.
I didn't even think about what it must be like at night with no power. Oh, I didn't even think about it. It must have been so strange.
I would have stayed inside.
Yeah.
I would not have left.
Well, you kind of, it's kind of like, how do you see where you're going?
It's scary. Sam.
Unless it's a full moon. How do you see where you're going?
Yeah, exactly. You know, the scariest thing I saw was when I was like driving around, like I was in a cab. And cabs, by the way, were like incredibly hard to get at that point. But there was like a candle in a window of a project. And I'm like, this is what it's going to look like after a nuclear winter. Like just like one holdout guy in a project somewhere like, you know, like Charlton Heston in the,
right.
you know, in the Omega Man kind of thing. And, you know, I was like, this is it. This is what it looks like, you know.
Right.
I was. It freaked a lot of people out. But then I think the gas thing freaked them out even more. The fact they couldn't get gas for their generators and cars and shit. They were online for like 12, 15 hours.
Yeah, I talked to a friend who said he was online. It was 2:30 in the afternoon. And he had been there since 6 in the morning, and he still hadn't gotten gas yet.
Easily, yeah.
That's crazy.
We never. I don't think even the government, local, whatever state thought like there's going to be a gas problem. You know, and nobody was ready. So.
Wow.
You need that gas for the generators, too. So,
Jesus Christ, especially in a place.
Am I bringing everyone
more?
Down? But it was bad.
Did you get any material from it at all?
Oh, yeah, I got tons. I mean, like, you know, the whole idea of, like, you know, basically doing shows. Like, in New York, like, the top of the line, like, guys who pull the most poon are, like, you know, the hedge fund guys, you know, the club DJ, you know, the male model who's, you know, bi or whatever. But that week, it was all, like, Renaissance fair skills, like candle maker, blacksmith, you know, any guy who could hook a bike up to a light, you know, he would get, like, you know, definitely at least a reach around. You know,
I watched that Yukon Man show. Have you ever seen that
show?
Yeah.
Those shows are important.
They have generators that work on water flow.
Oh.
So they take a generator, they set it up at their camp. They have a fish camp. And they put this generator, they set it up, and then they attach these tubes to it, and they stick the tubes in the creek. And the water coming down the creek goes through the tubes, and by the time it, you know, it focuses in this one area, it spins this thing around and starts a generator.
I want that.
It's
I want to get
that. It's
fucking
crazy. I watch it. He pulls the cord, and brrr, it's going on.
Wow.
He's got electricity 100% from the creek spinning this generator. So as long as this generator keeps working, he had his lights on, and the whole thing. It's crazy.
And that really is the one thing that you need is, like, power, you know?
Yeah.
It really is the one thing that separates us from animals.
Well, we've somehow or another just accepted that that's going to be around. Even though it's only been here for 150 years or whatever the hell it's been, we're so used to it. You know, a million years of human beings and 150 years of power. We're just like, that's how we do it. We got power.
I could see myself going to my ex-girlfriend's house and just hanging out because she would have, like, all the candles in the world. Like,
girls.
And
yes,
canned
girls.
Soup.
The amount of candles a girl has is directly proportionate to exactly how long she will cry after you have sex with her.
But yeah, girls were prepped a little bit harder than dudes. Yeah. Candles, Mentos, you know.
If there's like 30 candles, that bitch is going to cry for
Lip
a while.
Lip balm is petroleum-based, you know, whatever. Girl shit.
Yep.
But
they have a lot of different things to help you in survival situations.
Exactly. And I'll tell you, you know who really did not step up for this crisis? The dogs of New York City. Because, like, every other person in New York has a dog, but it's all these faggoty-ass little dogs.
Right.
You know, so, like, they've been genetically built. All the cool, like, wolf qualities that would have helped were gone. So they're like, what are we going to do?
Well, give me food.
Were you there when the snow hit afterwards?
No, I was already out of there. But that was, like, a 1-2 punch of, like, sadness.
What the fuck, man? A blizzard. And the really scary thing is that they're saying, who's the governor? Cuomo? Andrew Cuomo?
Yes. Yeah, he's a good guy, though.
He seems like a good guy. He said something really interesting. He said, I don't want to use the term climate change. I'm paraphrasing him because it's such a loaded topic. He said, but, you know, his father had to deal with, in 12 years, he had to deal with 2 major storm events.
Right.
And he's like, I've been here for 12 months and I've had to deal with 3.
Wow.
You know, so he's saying, like, it's very possible something's going on.
I think there's definitely something going on.
No, that's never happened in New York before.
Well, you know, a buddy of mine, I assume you know him too, Big J. Okerson.
Yes.
He's a great guy.
I know of him.
You know of him. Okay, yeah. You probably haven't worked with him yet, but really funny guy. He's toured with me a couple times. His house was wiped out. He was like in the flood zone, zone A or whatever it is. And, you know, it really is weird, like, when a flood comes at your house. So I'm lucky. I, like, lived up, you know, up in that skyscrapers. But the scary part about that is, like, if the power goes out, then you're, like, kind of stuck. up there until, like, you know, whatever happens. So
you're stuck up there until the water drains out.
Exactly. You know, it's
that's
like
scary,
you know,
shit.
A skeleton, you know, basically.
Yeah.
In a
no
pile
food.
Of porn.
Yeah. I believe in the theory that it was a terrorist attack.
You think
made,
so?
And I think all the terrorists are now hot weather ladies with beards.
Neptune Laden.
Well, your first part made sense. The second part is just like your Hitler cat with the fucking dynamite strapped to his chest. I don't know what you're trying to do there.
And a lot of people were just basically milling around a lot of, like, fires, you know, on the street, like people making fires and cooking out on the street,
right?
Which I think they should allow them to do.
Oh, hell yeah.
You know,
why
I mean,
not?
Like people, you know,
keep a sense of social
exactly.
connectedness. You
but
know?
Yeah, whoa, it was bad.
Were there food shortages at supermarkets?
Great
and
question.
Shit?
Yes, like the first night, like everybody prepped in terms of like, you better buy milk and bread. They always say that, milk and bread. For all the, French toast that we make, you know? And then, like, the next day, you know, you're like, okay, there'll be more. Nothing. There was nothing left. All the people from downtown who didn't have access to food came uptown like a horde. And, like, it was good that they did it because they had no food. And they kind of swept through all the bodegas and stuff like that. So it was, like, wiped out, you know?
Wow. That must have been strange.
Yeah. I mean, like, you always assume in America there's going to be food, you know?
The other thing is the cell phone towers were down, too.
Down, yep.
So even if you had a cell phone, you couldn't call anybody. My friend Tommy said he drove 6 hours to make a cell phone call.
Wow.
He had to just drive around until he could find service. But it was 6 hours before
that's
true. He, that's crazy.
Coco had service, though. Did you see the video she was posting of her, like, in the rain with, like,
who's Coco?
Ice-T's wife.
Oh, how dare you.
Well, she has special bling service.
Yeah,
you know?
Bing service.
She
yeah.
had cell phone service?
Yeah, she had cell phone service, and she was just posting these awesome videos of her in the hurricane, like rain hitting her while she's wearing, like, no clothes. She's
oh,
like,
God.
Oh, it's so rainy outside. It's great.
That's it's like hilarious. A video.
That's
a
hilarious.
A rap video.
Yeah.
A wet t-shirt. Exploration.
It was an entire wet t-shirt contest. And, like, Jersey, you played Atlantic City many times, right?
I've only played it a couple times.
Okay, because that place without power is fucking scary.
Oh,
dude.
Atlantic City's terrifying with power.
It really is.
It's a strange place.
It really is.
Because that whole area around Atlantic City is dark. I mean, that's
yeah.
a scary, fucking depressed area. The last thing you ever want to do is be a young black kid growing up in Camden.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that's a fucking bad part of the country right now.
But I have to say, I don't know, if the governor or whatever told you to, like, evacuate, would you do it? I mean,
well, it all depends on how much money you have. That's part of the mm-hmm. problem. Some people can't evacuate. There's nothing they can do. They
right.
can't go anywhere, right? I mean,
yeah.
We have to accept the fact that there's been a bunch of these massive sure. events. Is that Coco?
Yeah, look at this. Look behind you, Joe. It's liver.
That
she's
is the most.
I'm reporting.
That is the most ridiculous.
That really is ridiculous.
She's with these bags
and
of water.
She's like, look at my boobs. How wet they are.
That's her tropical storm outfit.
She's crazy. She must be awesome to have conversations
oh,
with.
Oh, dude, I love
poor
this
Ice-T.
Girl.
No wonder why Ice-T is always playing video games.
What are you talking about? He plays video games. And he's like, come over here with this body. She has the.
You love her body.
I love the that fake butt. When I was in Dayton, there was a
do
girl
really
with a
like
fake
that?
Butt. I think it's the next boob for real. This girl in Dayton, stripper, had a fake butt, and it was like the double D's of fake butts. It was so amazing looking. Hmm. She looked like a cartoon character.
Is that what? Does that affect the way they sit?
No, she sat really well.
Can she dirt bike? Can she dirt bike ride?
No, and she let me feel them, like, because I wanted to see if I could feel like a fake boob. It just felt like butt, because I guess there's so much fat back there.
Yeah,
there's a lot of fat to hide the implants behind.
Wow.
So it felt like a fake butt, and each one looked like a triple double D boob, like a humongous boob. Like, you could put a drink on top of it. If
well,
you
wow. don't. That's the latest thing in porno movies, right? Like,
yeah.
you see that a lot, is the fake butts now?
Yeah, well, I forget what they call that, but it, the badunk, you know, make it the booty reboot, I guess you would call it. But yeah.
Isn't it amazing that the shape of the ass has that much of an effect on us?
It's monkey genes,
dude. It's more even than, like, than their personality. Like, a girl with a nice personality, and she turns around and her ass is just ridiculous. Like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
do you like
shape.
A big one, or what do you like?
Oh yeah, I love
you like
I like
a big,
big
yeah,
ass.
Big
I like
boot.
A shapely tone.
Like, see, like, here's a look at
round
this.
Juicy
fake butt.
Ass.
I mean, that's
oh,
what
that's
it looked
that's
like.
Too much.
But hers
that's
was a little bit bigger than that.
That might be real, bro.
No, this is
she's
called
black.
Fake.
That looks like it's pointing.
Called fake bloods. Oh, that.
Oh, okay.
That's okay. Somebody, somebody photoshopped that shit.
Yeah. No, when we were doing the porn show, you and me, Joe, like, you were one of our amazingly greatest guests. We were kind of, you know, I think have difference of opinion with this.
Dave's Old Porn is the show. Yeah. It's on Showtime, and it's Dave and his friends sitting around watching videos of old porn.
From right.
The golden era.
One of the ultimate. You were the Hawkeye of the Last of the Mohicans of porn, dude. You know what you're doing.
I know too much.
You really
it's
knew
embarrassing.
It.
Embarrassing.
Taja Ray, you kept throwing that yeah. name out, and I was like, holy shit. I had to like go through my porn head to find out. It's like, excellent. So thank you.
There were so many.
And your show's Thursday.
Thursday at 11.
Your episode's Thursday, Joe's episode.
Yeah, this week, Joe and Ginger Lynn.
Showtime.
Who, for some reason, Joe, you know her.
She did my first CD. Oh. She did an introduction to this song that I wrote.
Yeah,
it was on my first CD.
She's cool, man.
She's very nice. She used to come around the Comedy Store all the time.
Really?
That's how I knew her. Well, she's a very nice person.
Her body, by the way, Ginger Lynn's body, I think is perfect.
Yeah, back in the day, you couldn't get much better. She was like, she looked like she was athletic when she was younger, mm-hmm. but she was just like curvy,
toned,
but not too big, and she had an amazing body. Amazing.
She really did. I mean, like her rack is like, I guess you could say it's like a B or something
yeah,
like that.
Perfect though.
But like it totally fits with her body and her yeah. face. She's just like a little angel. It was really. That was a hard episode to edit. You know,
she was
a lot of breaks.
Yeah,
I was not jerking off to you, but I was semi-turgid while you were on the screen. But there's a lot of hard work there.
It's kind of a funny show because you have us and we're sitting on the couch, and the couch will like grow or shrink depending on where
it's
the genitals are in the scene.
Mm-hmm.
So the so that's what it is. The couch is like covering the sex organs while they're doing it, and then we're commenting on the video. It was fun, dude. I really enjoyed it.
You, of course, knowing porn so well, you brought up something that a lot of guys have problems with, which is the male star not being able to get wood.
Yeah.
You know, you don't like that.
Well, she
a
told
lot,
us.
You don't like it.
She told us what it was about. Ginger did. She said they were all coked up.
Yeah, there's a lot of blow. Yeah,
which makes sense.
Yeah. So that's
going to be embarrassing as fuck for the guy.
You know, somehow it all leads to Tony, whatchamacallit, Lance Armstrong.
Well, they should have never used the footage. It does, like, there's footage where this guy never gets a hard on. He's banging her and his dick is like half limp.
Right.
Like he's like barely shoving it in. He's like pretending it's amazing. Like you shouldn't. That's it. That's a terrible piece of work you did there. Like that's not sexy.
I guess
that's
you're
not.
Right.
That doesn't get you excited.
It's like getting drunk before you go on stage. It's like, can't you just wait an hour?
Yes, son of a bitch.
You know what I mean? Really.
It is a sad thing. Well, it's a fun thing when a guy's drunk on stage and he's having a great time. Like mm-hmm. I've seen Kreischer hammered on stage, killing it. You know, I've seen videos of guys pull it off. Ron White pulls it off. But it's sad when you're drunk on stage and you're not doing well.
Yeah,
that's
hard.
It's sad. It's
but Ron
difference.
Is a good drinker. Ron is one of my buddies, and he is like, he's a classy drinker.
He's a black belt.
Yeah, he's excellent at it.
But, he's a black belt in drinking.
But in the porn world, back especially in the 70s and 80s, like, you know, blow back then was like considered, I don't know, you said Adderall. It was kind of the Adderall of our, of our time. And people just did it, you know, it was like fun and it kind of got them up and, you know, it's a sexy gig. And so they, maybe they overdid it, but still, I mean, hey, you know, I'm sure that blow was a lot better than the shit out there now.
You think so?
I
think they had like the real stuff back then?
Yeah, I think it was a lot purer, more like, you know, that was like the heyday of like, you know, just powder. So.
It's funny that they just accept the fact that it's going to be cut up. It's like,
what,
it's so, coke is so, it's such a watered down drug. Everybody accepts the fact that it's been cut up.
Yeah.
Well, it's just universal.
You can imagine, like, you ever watch those shows, like, you know, the Drug Inc., like when they show the guys making it in Colombia,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they just chew on the leaves. Like, I wonder what that's like.
I've had that. I've
what,
had
is that good?
In a tea form.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
They take the those leaves and just make a tea out of it.
Oh.
It's like very uppy. It gives you like an up. I didn't like it because what I didn't like about it is I couldn't shut the fuck up.
Jesus.
And, yeah,
can you imagine the
brutal.
Podcast if you
a
were
talkie
on that?
Tea.
Oh, it would be brutal. I was with Stanhope when I did it. We did mushrooms. It was the day of the Iraq War.
Oh.
It was we were in the desert tripping our balls off, and I was drinking this tea. And I drank the tea first, and the tea kicked in before the mushrooms even kicked in. I was like,
wow.
This tea is killing me. Like,
how do you guys even, like, he is, like, amazing. He's like the Timothy Leary of this shit. But how do you guys, tea, how do you get that? I mean, like, what?
I got it from a buddy who had just gotten back from Peru. That's how I got
Peru
it.
Yeah, Peru is the place.
Yeah, Peru.
Inca tea.
They chew those leaves. You know what's fascinating? the Coca-Cola is the number one importer for coca leaves in this country.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they literally take the coca leaves. That's like one of the secret ingredients in Coca-Cola. That it used to have cocaine in it. That's like one of the big things. Well, it doesn't have cocaine in it anymore, but it's still they still use the extract of the coca leaf.
Wow.
And they have like some deal with some medical manufacturing firm that that takes not manufacturing firm extraction firm that takes the leaves and takes the cocaine out of them. Uh-huh. So Coca-Cola gets it. They use it for like the flavonoids or whatever the fuck they use mm-hmm. that makes it taste a certain way. And this company makes cocaine out of it. I read this whole article describing how it's all done. It's fucking bananas.
So they have like a special take the fun out of the
yes.
machine.
Yeah, what they're going to do with weed pretty soon.
Yeah, that's
those
right.
Jewish people.
I was going to say that. In Israel, they're doing that thing now where they're taking out all the fun of the weed just for the medicinal.
Why?
Like, yeah, really. It's like a Odules of weed or something.
Yeah, well, they're figuring out that there's different things that do different things inside of marijuana, and one of them are CBDs, I guess, and those I don't know something else. But it's not like they're not exactly cannabinoids. It's or maybe it is a cannabinoid, but it's a non psychoactive one. But it does it helps
you,
different
yeah.
ailments. Well, marijuana is like very healthy.
Yeah, that's
to eat.
That's a hemp.
Yeah,
right.
Not even hemp, like the actual plant itself. If you could juice it, if you juice hemp, it's really good for you.
If you were like, let's say like a doomsday prepping question here. If you were like in a place where there was only like pot plants to eat, you could eat them.
Oh, yeah, you can eat them. They're super nutritious. Uh-huh. That's what I'm saying. You can make like a salad out of them and it wouldn't get you high at all.
Well,
but
what about
it would
a cereal?
Be really
be
healthy.
Better.
I guess you'd have to try it out though.
Oh, okay. Because that would be kind of cool, like a little like pot cereal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pour some soy milk on it or the cocoa. What's the stuff that you guys are doing here?
Cocoa Cafe.
Cocoa Cafe.
This is some stuff that they sent me. It's coconut juice or coconut water.
That'd be
mixed with coffee.
Espresso.
That'd be so cool for your kids. You'd have to be the worst parent or the coolest parent. But it was like, kids, time for school. You know, here's some of your pot cocoa coffee.
I think it's hard enough being a kid going to school high. Really?
Oh my god, that's delicious, dude!
It's great, isn't it?
Oh, it's like chocolate milk.
Do you want one of these, man?
Sure.
That's
great. They sent me a couple cases.
Where do you get? Can you just get these like anywhere? Or?
Yeah. It's called Cocoa Cafe.
Oh my god, it's like chocolate milk.
I like the packaging too.
It's yummy.
It's excellent.
It's yummy. It's very good. There's a lot of these coconut water combinations that really suck a dick.
Wow.
Some of them are terrible.
Coconut water and vodka is pretty good. That's what I drink.
Oh, yeah? It's a good taste? But a lot of these companies have shitty taste in coconut water. You got to get coconut water. Like the reason why C2O's coconut water is the most delicious is they get their – it's a totally different coconut tree. They get their coconuts from Thailand, from one small place, one plantation. And the coconuts – the trees are like a short tree. It's only like 5 feet tall. It's a totally different tree. Like you picture those big, tall coconut trees. Those apparently taste like dog shit.
Okay.
Like that's most people are getting their coconut water from those. But the boutique places like C2O, they're really cool and they send us free shit too. And they have the most delicious coconut water. It's like very sweet.
I like it, man. It tastes good.
But ultimately, you can't fuck with fresh coconut water. You ever get it like right from a coconut?
Every time I go to a Thai restaurant, if you go to a Thai restaurant or even some Chinese or whatever, but you can they have fresh coconuts, mm-hmm. and I never knew this, and they just split the top off, and it's delicious. And you take a spoon and you eat the white shit.
What is that again? The white shit in there?
It's coconut meat.
It's coconut cum.
Sorry.
It's really super healthy for you too. Especially that water. That water from a fresh coconut is just it feels so good after you've worked out. It's delicious.
Oh,
yeah,
boy.
To this day, Coca-Cola still imports cocoa leaves, which are used to manufacture cocaine in the United States. Isn't that nuts?
I didn't know that. Yeah. Hey, I'm for it, though. I'm for all legalization of all drugs. Colorado, they just legalized the recreational pot.
And Washington.
Yeah.
And Washington.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's going to be interesting to see what the federal government decides to do about that.
Yeah.
They step in and decide to start arresting people.
I think they should leave them the fuck alone.
That's what they should have done a long time ago.
Yeah, just let it happen. I mean,
the problem is it doesn't ever seem like anybody wants to relax.
In this country, yes.
Everybody's always trying to arrest. There's no relaxing of laws. It's like an acceleration of laws. Especially the other problem is that the economy's down. And when the economy's down, it's hard to tell people, you know, we're going to change laws and put people out of work who are law enforcement officers, because that's what would happen. I mean, if you all of a sudden made marijuana completely legal and you didn't need DEA agents to chase after weed, you'd have a lot of fucking unemployed people. There's a lot of people that there are a lot of arrests. If you look at all the arrests, there's millions of arrests attributed every year that are marijuana related, and those all equal. Law enforcement officers have to work, you know, the people at the jail. There's like lawyers, court fees. There's money to be made in keeping it illegal. And so that's one of the hardest parts about making anything legal is the money behind it.
But how does it work? Like, you live in Colorado, okay? So you want to buy some pot. So what do? You go to a store? Is there a truck? You flag it down like an ice cream truck?
Well, I think it's going to be – you're going to have a certain amount that you're allowed to have. Mm-hmm. And right now, it's the only medical setup in the country that where they allow the growers to make a profit. In California, you're not supposed to make a profit.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. So in California, like when you see these big places, those are the ones that get shut down because, you know, they're making like X amount of millions of dollars a year selling pot. Well, you're not supposed to be doing that. And when you do that, I think the only way to do it is you have to give all the money back to the community, or you know, ridiculous. make it so that all the money goes to charities or, you know, funds, or so there's some sort of a workaround where you get a fair wage for working there, and everyone, including the owner, would get a fair wage, and then the money has to get distributed. Colorado doesn't have it like that. In Colorado, you could just make money selling weed.
That's how it should be, man. Yeah. Because that'll be like, you know, the pot barons.
It's,
you know,
farming, man. That's what it is. It's fucking farming. And this idea that it's different because it's a drug, that it's so stupid. There's plenty of drugs available in this country. To pretend this country is anti-drugs is one of the dumbest fucking things ever. Everybody looks forward to doing drugs in this country.
Yeah.
They look forward to drinking. They look forward to smoking. They look forward to having a cup of coffee. All of these are drugs, you know?
Yeah, it's like, let the people be adults, you know? I mean, there's so much, you know, pain and, like, suffering out there. Might as well, like, if this takes some of the edge off of that, let it happen, you know?
Yeah, you're not going to stop it by making things illegal. You're just going to create an industry off of keeping it illegal. The only way you get people to not do things is through education.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether it's their own personal education, like, if they have to watch people fuck up. You know, I've never done coke. I've never done coke because I watched people who, when I was a kid, who did coke and their life fell apart.
Yeah.
I saw it happen. I was like, keep that shit away from me. But
plus, you're an athlete. So, I mean, like, as an athlete, you can't do certain things.
Coke's certainly a bad one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But a lot of athletes do it, man.
Yeah, like in the 70s, like a lot of the sports guys, especially like baseball, you know, hockey, those kind of, they were like, they were racked out on that shit. So
I'm too impulsive. I don't trust myself.
Really?
If I really enjoyed it, yeah, I don't trust myself.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to have anything in my system that's addictive like that. Because it seems like cocaine is very physically addictive.
Yes. Yeah.
Heroin, rough. Very physically addictive, right?
Heroin, yeah. I don't know about that one. That one I could see being... if people have a heroin addiction, they should have the needle exchange and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, nobody should promote heroin. I mean, you can't bake it into a cookie. There's
unless
no fun to it.
You're a musician.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I'm like, well,
then it should be a law that you have to do it.
you should at least try it.
Can you imagine if every musician had to do heroin? Like some of that bubblegum shit out there, it would have a whole different take on it. You know?
Yeah, no kidding. Nothing shook up the music world more than heroin.
Yeah,
and marijuana.
Nice. Yeah, I guess
marijuana
right
shook
that.
It up a lot too. But there's the bands who did heroin had very specific sort of, they had like an intensity and an emotion and an honesty to their stuff that the bubblegum people, you know, if it's weird if you go back and listen to like Buddy Holly or something like that, great music.
Yeah,
but listen to like what that guy was doing, and then, you know, listen to Nirvana.
Frank Zappa, I
mean, Alice in Chains.
That guy was on every. I think Frank Zappa was like almost the, you know.
Yeah.
It was like a one-stop shopping kind of drugs. I mean, but he was on cool drugs too, like ecstasy and you know, I guess LSD, stuff like that.
His tapes were the worst or the best. When
I don't really know, so I don't want to say, but
when I was 15, I would listen to Zappa tapes in the church parking lot, and just that, you know, first time smoking weed, and you're just like listening to his crazy shit. It was like watching. It was like virtual acid trips.
That guy is an artist. That guy was. Really, there's no one like that guy.
He was very unusual. I got introduced to him when I was probably like 10 years old. My friend's dad was into him.
What a cool dad.
Yeah, Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention. Mm. Yeah, the guy, I remember the dude drove a Saab. So it was like 1970, dude had a Saab. I was like, what is that thing?
That's
this crazy
thing,
ass
man.
Car. And he was into Frank Zappa. He's just a cool ass dad.
Well, that's the whole thing about like this whole now, like with rich people, you know, it's like, you know, how much money do the rich people need? I guess now, like, the ultimate perk is a private jet. But back then, it would have been, like, a car, you know?
Well,
you have
you
a
get,
butler.
You
know?
Get obsessive, I think. You look at like, some of these hedge fund guys mm-hmm. where they were talking about, there was one guy whose wife got some of the bailout money. Because the bailout money, a lot of it was in the form of loans.
Oh.
And this guy was worth who knows how many hundreds of millions of dollars. But they showed his house. They, like, zoomed in on his house in the Hamptons. And it was just fucking insanity.
Huge,
it's
right?
just craziness. This guy, I mean, you can't even call it a compound. It was a castle. He had a castle. He has a castle in the Hamptons.
See, I don't even like that when I go to a hotel. Like, if it's too fancy, you know, like whatever they, you know.
Four Seasons or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, like I don't do any, I don't rate any of that. I don't, it's not in my ride or anything. I like a hotel where I can do my laundry. That's like the ultimate perk for me. It's like, if I can do my shitty laundry because I'm on the road so long, then I feel good. But there's some hotels where like, everybody's like, oh yeah, this is, you know, get a massage and all that kind of stuff. I'm not into that.
Courtyard Marriott's. They,
yes.
They always
yes.
have.
It's like a little house.
Yes.
A little home away from home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Courtyard Marriott's a good spot. It's a good middle ground.
Like when I tour with Norton and Artie Lang, you know, we're on the Antisocial tour. You know, those guys, I think they like it a little like more. I think they like it better when it's like that. I just don't like it, you know. But we usually all stay at the same place. And that's a fun tour because you know those guys. I mean,
yeah,
they're just
great
good
guys.
And, you know, we're all so old now. And like, you know, we've all been through the ringer to some degree. And Norton is just incredibly fearlessly funny, and Artie is naturally probably one of the best comics I've ever seen in my life. And it's just fun to hang with these guys because now we're at that age where it's just like, it's just fun to be around guys that you know, and you can just fucking, you know,
just
have
enjoy
fun.
It yeah
yeah. And we play these casinos, and like, you know, it's like our biggest thing is like, where are we gonna eat, you know, let's eat, you know, like that's
yeah,
a big,
yeah yeah,
that's the big fun of the night. You know?
It's so fun going on tour with friends. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really makes the whole experience way better. I just did San Francisco and Seattle last weekend with Fitzsimmons.
Oh, he's one of my yeah. best friends in comedy. Yeah.
I love that guy.
He's
we had such a good time, man. It was so fun.
He is one of the most underrated comics
yeah.
because his comedy is so, it's so good. It's so dry and funny and well thought out. And, you know, I know this turns into a big stroke fest about comedy, but if you're anywhere where Greg is touring, go see him because he really is a great comic. I like him.
Yeah, he killed it. He killed it in San Francisco and Seattle. It was awesome. He was really, really fucking funny. It's that attack style Boston comedy,
yes,
too.
Yes, yes.
You know? We started out together, Fitzsimmons. We're like a week apart from each other.
Boston is like turning out to be, this is the, you know, the generation of the Boston comics, you know, you, Greg, Louie, of course, Nick DiPaolo,
yeah,
know, these are the guys. You know?
Well, there was a lot back then, man. It was a very unusual time as far as like the development of stand up. You had one area where you had so many clubs and so many comics in this one town. Like you could go to, it always amazed me. Like I would go to like Pittsburgh or Philly. And I'd be like, where's the scene? Where do you guys go? Do you got a Knicks Comedy Stop? You got a Stitches?
Nothing.
They didn't have anything.
Nothing.
That's like, we had so many places to go. Like, if I knew, like, open mic night was a Sunday night. I knew that if I went to open mic night, I would see Teddy Bergeron.
Right.
I would see, you know,
Tony V.
Tony V.
Guys.
Yeah, all those guys. They'd be working out. They'd be hanging out. They would go up and do sets. You would see them. They would do sets on Sundays and Monday nights. They would go up at the end of the show and perform. I mean, it was like a real community of stand-up comedy. But it's not like that even there anymore. It died.
Yeah, I was just at the theater in Boston. And, you know, if you want to run around and do other sets, there's really not many places at all. And
no.
If you're starting out there, I can only imagine how you do it. You know,
I don't know what happened.
I think that they overdid it because every other place, like, you know, there's the Hooky Lau and the, you know, the place in Chicopee, like Chinese food restaurants were doing
right.
shows, that, like, the crowds just, I guess, got babied or, like, you know, spoiled. And they're like, there's plenty of comedy out here. I don't have to go see it. And there were a lot of, like, you know, for every good comic, there's, like, three or four hacks, you know?
Yeah,
so
that's true.
I guess after a while, like, you know, they always say the cream rises to the top. But, you know, it's a pretty big rise. There's a lot of guys who are just, you know, ecking by with their, you know, clapper joke.
You know what's interesting, though? In the beginning, there were less bad guys and more good guys. If you go
true.
Back to, like, the Jimmy Tingle era, Jimmy Tingle, Barry Crimmins, Tony V,
mm-hmm.
Lenny Clark, that era, they're all killers. There was, like, more great comics back then than there were mediocre guys.
Wow.
You know, when I started out in 88, and I got to see, you know, like some of the best comics ever, like the local guys.
Yeah.
I got to see them, like, all the time. There was so much good comedy in that one place.
Mm-hmm.
There was, I would say, it was one of the rare instances where there was more good comedy than there was bad comedy.
The thing that always got me about the Boston guys compared to the New York guys, and I hope I didn't say this last time I was on your show, but they came to New York. You guys all eventually came to New York. And you guys were ready to headline, like, almost immediately, whereas the New York guys, like, we were, like, years away from headlining. Like, we were just trying to, like, work the weekends. It was a slower process because there was just too much, I guess, open mic, too much, you know, too many comics and not enough stage time. So you really had to fight for the stage time. But you guys definitely knew who you were. You like, had an act. You had a perspective. And then you definitely, you know, came to the scene and it made it way better. It made it way better.
Well, you know what it was is that Boston guys had a chance to work long sets. We would do, we would work for like the Comedy Connection had a bunch of gigs and Barry Katz had a bunch of gigs. All these different people had gigs and they were all over the place. And you would do 45 minutes. You'd do an hour here, half hour here, 45 minutes here. So we weren't just doing the short sets in town. When I went to New York and I saw that everybody would like, take a cab and go from one crowd to another crowd doing 7 minutes here and 7 minutes there.
Yeah.
I was like, that's crazy. That doesn't make any sense. Like,
That's how we lived for years. Yeah.
So even when I lived in New York, I did almost all my sets on the road. I did all my sets in Connecticut. I was like, I can go to do a John Schuler gig in Connecticut and make $150, or I could go do a set in the city and make like 10 or something like that. Whatever. What did Dangerfields paid the most? They paid like 50 or something, right?
Well, like Governors, which is on Long Island, that's kind of where I kind of started out. I just recently was there, and the guys who run Governors now are so pro-comedy, so pro-like, you know, supporting comedy, bringing up new talent and all that kind of stuff. And it's really great to see because for a long time, you know, like the outlying clubs were really just like, you know, Jersey, the island, Connecticut. You know, you just went there for money.
Yeah.
And now it's like this is like a good place to work out. You know,
well,
like,
Governors was always really good.
That was, Governors was top-line club.
Yeah, that was always really good. And the Brokerage, remember the Brokerage?
The Brokerage Pub, yeah.
Yeah, that was a great place too. There was always a lot of good places to do stand-up, you know. Of course, Rascals.
Mm-hmm.
There was Rascals East End, Rascals Down the Shore.
Rascals, it's such a heartache because that was a great, great club. And, you know, you talk about Jersey, that was like the place where like Dice would come in and Dom and all those guys, they would come in and it would be a big event, you know.
Yeah, yeah,
you
I know? Remember.
It was
I would go see guys there. When I lived in New York and someone would say, you know, hey, this guy's going to be, you know, at Rascals, like we would drive to Rascals to watch the show. Yeah, because it was a place where you could see someone do a real long set.
Right.
You know, like at Caroline's or something like that, where you get to see them do like 45 minutes or an hour.
Yeah, Caroline's and Gotham are really the big, like, you know, you get to do an hour in the city. And they're great. And, you know, it's hard on the crowd, I think, just to some degree, because, you know, there's a lot of, like, expenses of parking and food and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, it's kind of cool that you get to see, like, we just work with Amy Schumer. She's so funny. She's so good. Like, I saw her at Gotham, and she fucking rocked out. And, you know, I'm going to be playing Caroline's down the road. And, you know, you always like it when you get to do a long set in your hometown. So, you know.
Yeah, I love Gotham for that very reason, too. I just, I never really did many sets at the other places. Like, occasionally I would do, like, Boston Comedy or The Cellar or the Comic Strip. But it just, it always seemed to me like if I could do a long set, it would be better for my act.
Well, The Cellar now has, like, become this, like, I guess you could call it, like, the Alamo of comedy. Like, people come in, they just take a picture of the front because of Louis. You know, Louis has, like, put it on the map.
Right.
And Louis, who's probably one of the best comics ever, he goes down there and does sets and Rock and, you know, Chappelle when he's in town. And I guess there's other guys like Aziz and things like that. So you do get to see, like, some celebrity comics there. But the majority of the guys working there are, like, pretty hardcore headlining, you know, top-of-the-line comedy. And the people who run it are, you know, they're for comedy. Like, they're not promoters, like, let's, you know, like, turn this into a, you know, website or kind of, you know, cartoon or something like that.
Well, they must feel so fortunate when that does happen, when you get a place where a bunch of great comics like Louis and Chris Rock and all these different guys, and you show up and decide to do sets there on a regular basis.
Oh, I bomb there, I'd say, every other time. But for the other guys, it is a great experience.
Every other time?
Yeah, because, like, I never try and do, like, I always, you know, when back in the day when I would go on the road, I'd be like, okay, I'm back in the city now, and I want to do, like, something different. I want to do different jokes. I want to, like, you know, explore comedy, you know, and that involved bombing to some degree. So I would, you know, do the stuff that I knew wouldn't work, but I still thought was funny. And the crowds used to roll with that. But now, nowadays, the crowds are not like that. They really want to see a performance. They want to see it tight. Like, you ever on stage sometime, you're like, oh, that one didn't turn out. And you could see in the crowd, they're, like, kind of disappointed. I'm like, don't worry, guys. The next one will be funny. Don't worry.
I don't think a lot of people are aware of the process.
Right.
The creating new material process, which involves a lot of risks.
Yeah.
You know, and I just throw them in my sets, and I'll do, like, new bits. I just chuck them in the middle, and and whether or not it works, we'll find out. But sometimes they don't go well. Sometimes you're not exactly sure what the right order it is for the pieces in it. And
like, we were talking about Doug. I saw him at Caroline's probably like a year ago, and he was up there just basically, he had just done an album. He was in England. He was like coming off of like a hardcore tour, and he was up there. I would say he was doing like, you know, he was doing his job. He was getting laughs, but he also was doing just like some thoughts, some things that he just wanted to talk about. And as a fan of comedy, because I wasn't a comic, I wasn't thinking I'm going on. I was like, this is what I love watching, like when a guy's like just thinking it out and he doesn't know where it's going to go. And I think that's kind of cool and exciting. But for the fan, like especially people who've like, you know, they've seen comedy on TV or they like know one person and then they come and see these unknown people. I always feel like they're disappointed. And I used to get really angry at them, but now it's like, I just feel sorry for them. It's like, wouldn't it be cool if you got to see the Stones, not to equate like what we do to like the Stones, but like them working on Start Me Up. Like, yeah. I think that would be cool. You know,
well, this is the stand-up comedy is the only art form where you really need an audience.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
To perfect the bit.
Absolutely.
They're involved in the creation process. Cause as they laugh, things evolve and change. Mm-hmm. And as you feel them enjoying the bit, it's really hard for anybody who has never done stand-up to describe that feeling when something's killing. Like, you know the timing. You feel where to jump in. You feel where to let things sit. And you really need an audience to do that.
Yeah. And I always like when you push it past the point of funny to like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Because then, you know, the next time you're like, okay, so that's the end of it. Yeah. So then next time I'll pull back or, you know, go in a different direction. That's just my, I guess, process, if you
and,
will. You know?
And sometimes you can go further. Sometimes there's different days where you have a different amount of enthusiasm in chasing the darker aspects of a subject.
But people don't like dark the way your crowd is cool. Like, they like comedy and they see the funny and sadness in life. But I think the majority of like young audiences who've never failed at anything, it's kind of like weird when you do a joke and like there's not a win or a happy ending at the end. They're like, oh,
well,
you know?
As long as it's really funny, I think there's less tolerance for self-indulgent angriness today.
Oh, see, well,
because
yeah.
I think people are more aware of what it actually is now.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before, someone would say something shocking and fucked up, and people would go with it and go, oh, he's an edgy comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, the majority of people are aware, oh, no, that's just a fucked up guy, and he's like pushing your buttons by saying something shocking. But it's not. There's no real thought behind it. He's not really trying to say anything. He's just trying to make something shocking, make it work, use it
right.
as a tool to get a reaction from the crowd. And people don't want that. But dark, great humor, it's fucking, it's always funny. If it's funny, it's funny.
It's
Stanhope
so
shit is still very dark and very hilarious.
Incredibly dark. And, like, you know, people talk about, like, you know, develop a following and all this kind of stuff. It's like,
what does
the
that
people
mean?
Who follow Stanhope are really the, you know, the darkest motherfuckers out there. God bless him, because he really does not. He doesn't sugarcoat any of his shit. You know,
I love him. His new CD is fantastic, dude.
Yes.
It's one of his best ones ever.
And that's another
really
thing
good.
About him, man. He always bangs out like a new hour, like every year and a half.
Yeah,
you know,
he's
whatever.
Constantly working. Yeah, it's so important to have a guy like that around.
He's
to
the
all
guy.
Of us. To all of us.
Yeah.
We all, like Louis, it's important to have a guy like that around.
Louis,
a crazy work ethic.
Another guy who every year or so has another hour. And
yeah.
Besides that, like, his crowd is so connected to him that, you know, I feel that his stuff, you know, it's so personal that, like, somehow they relate to it in a whole different way that I can't even understand, you know?
Yeah. He develops, like, different parts of his actual real life.
Yeah.
Puts him in there.
It's fucking a downer, dude. Huh? Guy's got a TV show. Step it up, huh?
Yeah, people don't like hearing about people suffering anymore.
I know, right?
They want positive energy, especially since The Secret.
But you got to give comedy bones for one thing. During that whole like New York thing, Broadway shut down. The Big Apple Circus, no way. The only thing rolling out funny-wise was comedy, and I thought that was good. I was like proud to be a comic. I was
so
like,
the
yeah.
Cellar was rolling out with a generator.
They were rolling out with a generator. They were closed the first couple days like everybody else, but then they like, we got to do some shows. And I think Tom Papa was behind that, who's another really good guy, really, really funny guy. And this new club, The Stand, they were doing shows to candlelight, so that was like, you can't get any more cool. Renaissance fairy than that.
That's
you know?
Sick.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. I've been on stage before and the power's gone out.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, strange.
Because now you're just a guy talking. You yeah. have no microphone. You
know? Heffron did a whole set to candlelight once.
That would be a cool CD.
Yeah, John Heffron said he was on stage and the power went off and it was pretty clear it wasn't coming back on, so he just did the whole set to candlelight.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It was a little... My act is so filthy dirty that the romantic candlelight situation does not match
feels
the scene
rapey.
There. You
know, it's really, perfect.
You know, I'm somewhere between candlelight and a cross burning. You know what I'm saying? Like that kind of thing.
A campfire.
A campfire.
And a tarring and feathering.
But anyway, I have to tell you, man, you rocked out on the porn show. And I don't want to be a whore and just talk about porn. But, you know, this is the new season. And
Dave's old porn on yeah. Showtime.
And I got to say that, like, you know, having you there, it really helped me because I knew you had my back with the porn. And we watched some of Ginger's greatest clips because we had, like, so much Ginger Lynn, you know, clips, loops, movies. And, like, you got to give it to her because she's like a, you know, she's like, I guess you would call, like, a Delta Force of porn stars. She was out there. And, like, once she got into it, she was into it full tilt, you know, anal, you know, three ways, all that kind of stuff.
John Holmes.
She's banging John Holmes. I mean, like, just like, you know, you forget that, like, in the 80s, like, there's a crossover between, like, the 70s people and then the 80s. And Ginger and Christy Canyon, I think, are the uber babes of the 80s. And I have both of them on the show. And I feel like, yeah, that's a win.
Yeah, Christy Canyon was there when we were leaving.
Yeah. Christy is with Marc Maron. And that's a whole different ballgame. That'll be later in the season. But I just did their radio show on Playboy Radio, and it's really cool, like, because they're out there, you know, they're still talking the talk, and they're sexy. I mean, there's a sexiness to them. I don't know what to tell you. They still get me, you know, going. They're hot, you know? Even though they're a little older. Hey,
what are you
we're
trying
all
to say?
Older.
What are you trying to say?
I'm just saying that they're fucking, you
You're
know,
ready for a Christy Canyon Ginger
I wish. I said to Christy, I go, I've had a crush on you since, like, 1986, you know? It's just crazy, but she is, like... The, you know, I don't know. She's beautiful.
You think you had a shot?
Please,
no,
come on.
There's nothing,
no.
nothing there.
No, I think that a lot of those girls, like, you know, it was the hair bands of the 80s. Mm-hmm. And then I'm sure a lot of movie star kind of guys, you know, all that kind of stuff. But
they're probably tired of dick by now. They're like, please. The
I
last
don't know.
Thing
I think that they're.
Offer me is some dick.
And when I was in San Francisco, Serena, who was, I think, one of the hottest women ever to do porn. She's a redhead, strawberry blonde. Serena, who was, you know, up for anything, man. Like, her scene's never boring. And she came to my show when I was working at Cobb's, and it's cool to hang with her, you know? She's just really cool.
Isn't it weird that they're still making porn, if you really
Some
stop
of them,
and
yeah.
think about it? No, that's not what I mean. I mean that anybody's still making
porn. Oh, that's right.
Isn't there enough to jerk off to?
There's
I mean, how
definitely
many fucking
enough.
Videos do you need? It's like, there's no way you could ever possibly seen all the porn that's there. It's like buying books and you haven't read any of them.
Yeah, like we could have built like a seawall with old porn around Manhattan, and it would have been as dry as a bone.
If you stop and think about it, how many porns have been made? Like millions and millions of porns. There's no way anybody has jerked off to all the porn that's ever been made.
I'm trying.
Do you have a specific category that you automatically go to?
I don't know if we talked about it last time, but like. I love amateur casting, you know, any era, but I love it from the 80s and 90s more than now, even though there's like four or five different like genres for casting. But Pierre Woodman, who's a French dude, he used to do this thing called private casting, and I love his stuff. And, you know, if he was in America, like I would have him on in a second, even though like I don't think I could show any of his stuff. It's too late. But I like the retro stuff now a lot more than I used to ever like it. And, you know, I guess now that's like the new kink for me, you know?
People love that amateur shit, like where, you know, they come in for it because it's like this is
yeah.
the first time ever and they're awkward. As opposed to like the girl who you lift up her skirt, she's already fingering her asshole.
Yeah,
or,
yeah,
you know,
she's training.
Yeah,
trained.
She's just already there and ready to go. And you know, like, oh my God, this is like the thousandth dick you've seen this week. This is not special yeah, for you. You're just doing an act.
Well, when we were doing Ginger Show, like just luck of the draw, we pulled one of her tapes where she did her first anal.
Woo.
And we were like, whoa, yeah. This is amazing. You
she
know,
had a big
like,
hairy box back then, too.
Yeah, remember? But we both, you said that you didn't really mind the hair.
Doesn't
is that
bother
true?
Me.
Not at all.
Doesn't bother me.
Yeah. No. It was. She's so cute that she could get away with a nice little tuft. You
it's
know?
Like, it doesn't matter. They're hot. Like I mean, if there was like a lot of like asshole hair, yeah, the legs,
yeah, that's a little too much.
Some, I mean, if you date like one of those Eastern Bloc women, darker ones,
yeah, you can only imagine that iron curtain pussy. Like that must be crazy. Ugh.
There's got to be some hairy bitches up there, especially up north where it gets really cold.
Oh, yeah, like a vampire or something.
the upper legs.
But yeah. I would have to say that you know, now with shaving, that a lot of the younger girls are. Letting it grow out a bit because it's cool, and ooh. I think they realize that, like, fuck, what am I doing this for? You know, it's like, honestly, you know,
it doesn't have to be shaven. Shaving's weird. Except
the vagina, it beats everything. So.
Crabs,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. But
crabs can hide in there.
But I think what they do is they do the strip. Most of the girls will do diamond, you know, and I think that works. That's the best way to go. But you're right, the anal hair. That's yeah, you got to bleach
that's
that.
A problem.
Trim that out. Get some illegals in there.
Isn't
it
weird that every girl? I mean, it's sort of just. Universally accepted that hairy legs are disgusting. No one bucks that trend.
Yeah, Esther.
Esther doesn't shave her
legs.
She
has longer hair on her legs than my chest.
What?
Wow, how does she get away with that?
She just wears pants all the time.
Wait a minute. Are you serious?
I swear to God.
Esther does not shave her legs.
No. Or armpits.
But when you watch like all these like old school things like Game of Thrones or something like that, you know, think about it. Every chick was hairy. You know, yeah. Like just disgustingly.
But they didn't look hairy. Like the hot mother, the mother to the new
king.
She's hot.
Yeah, she's really hot.
She doesn't look like she has hairy legs.
No,
I bet
not
shaves.
At all.
She's
no.
not period friendly. You know, it's not
a corset
not,
and whatnot. Yeah.
Yeah, she's not in the correct. Did they shave their legs back then?
No,
not at all.
I wonder when that started, the shaving of the leg.
I think the early '80s.
As soon as someone realized how hot it was.
Yeah.
They're like, why fuck? I mean, you have legs.
It really is hot.
Why fuck? Yeah, it's the hottest thing ever. It's a weird thing. Girls with long, hot legs, shapely legs.
Oh, how about when the girl just shaves like up to the knee high? You know, like they'll just shave like what they need.
Yeah.
And everything else is like this incredibly disgusting forest. Ooh. Yeah. Ugh. It's hard being a girl. So that's all we can get out of that.
It's way harder.
It's hard. It's a lot of work.
Plus, you can get pregnant. You know, could you imagine? Every time you have sex, all of a sudden it can mean another person's growing inside you.
Yeah.
What a fucking drag.
Mm.
Meanwhile, guys don't have to think
popping
about it
loads.
Ever. Just our design is to just go shoot them off.
Hard loads.
Undeniable impulse to constantly be shooting off loads.
Well, here's a bit I was working on, which maybe you can help me out with, is the hot load. You know, how guys always assume their loads are incredibly hot. So do you back away so that by the time it hits, it's a lukewarm, kind of nice feel?
Well,
you know?
If you're courteous, you blow on it.
Fever loads.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
You shoot a load in their face. The least you can do is treat it like a soup.
Take a step back so that there's, you know, some of the fire, you know, the fireball.
Isn't it amazing that you can blow on soup and it actually cools it off?
It's great.
Isn't it amazing that you can blow out hot air or cold air? You can just go, and it's
can
hot.
You get it hot?
And then or it's cold. Like, how do you change it? Like,
ooh, I didn't know that you could do that until right now. I didn't even realize that. But he's right. If you do, like, you get it from, like, the deep inside your body.
Is that it?
It's hot, right?
It never runs out. You can keep on doing it.
I can barely breathe, so I'm going to have to go on your...
Dude, that's totally true.
I know. Strippers did it on my crotch through my pants.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
There you go.
Are you a big strip club guy, Dave?
You son of a bitch.
I used to go all the time. Now I feel like, you know, what's the point?
I lost my ear here.
I don't care about, like, you know...
I heard you were the only person I ever. Somebody told me that you really liked the Body Shop in Hollywood.
I was there during the fire. They had a fire there.
Yeah,
you know that.
Yeah.
The next day they had like this incredible fire.
That's a story. Yeah. You were. What did you say?
Yeah, no, I don't really like the club, but that was definitely one of those clubs where like, hey, you can walk to it. You know, like you're on
the place
strip.
Across the street from the store.
Yeah, like you go play the Comedy Store. You want to do something, so you're like, hey, you go over to the Body Shop. But I went there like one or two times, and I would say that, you know, the girls were really hot, but I feel like a lot of them were not like pros. A lot of them were just just like party girls who wanted to make some coin. And, you know, we went there. There was like girls and guys came with us. So like they were all over the girls and the guys, you know, like watching that for some reason. I never really give a shit about that. But I would say it's a good club, you know.
Yeah, I remember that somebody told me you liked that club. And then you said like the next day after going to it, burned down. And you're like, great. The one place that I found that burnt down.
Jewish lightning, cocksucker.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, that place was across the street from the Comedy Store, but we only went to it like twice.
Yeah.
And it was only when someone's in town. It's like, hey, you want to go down to the body shop? Mm-hmm. And it was always somebody else's idea.
I don't like places that don't serve liquor, strip clubs that don't serve
liquor. Yeah, they don't serve any liquor there.
Yeah, I would like to have alcohol. They make you buy two Cokes.
Well,
they
like have a $9 water.
I used to have a bit about it. Vaginas and alcohol, for some reason, it's just a volatile combination in California. You can't see that. Like, you could have a girl could have a bikini bottom on, show your tits, and you could barely keep it together with a beer. But if you have like actual alcohol and see a vagina, there'd just be too much chaos.
Well, that's why I want to go to Thailand at some point, because supposedly they have like the ultimate, you know, like stripper bar, bang bang girl.
I heard Soapies. Have you heard of Soapies?
No.
Some guy just told me in Columbus we were there, and he said there's these things called Soapies where you lay down.
Oh, and
they put soap all over you, and then they get completely naked and they rub your body with their body, like they just lay on you and squish around and stuff like
and
that.
And do you shoot loads?
No, and then they dry you off, and then you fuck them.
But, whoa.
That's a lot of time.
And you pick out, when you first get in, though, there's like 30 people, and they all hold up a number, and you pick which one you want.
That's for a guy on vacation.
Yeah. That's still going on, or was that something
in the 70s? Yeah, it's still going on. Like
the Vietnam War thing.
It's still going on. I was actually looking at flights from Ohio, like just to see how much it was. It was $1,200. But
you're going
to
go to Thailand?
Yeah, but it was a 24-hour flight, and I was like, fuck that. I'm not 24 hours.
That's got to be a weird flight, because everybody on that plane is a pervert. Yeah. There's nobody going there like, hey, you know, I'm going to University of Thailand.
Is it really a 24-hour flight?
Yeah.
I didn't know a plane could stay in the air for 24 hours.
Crazy. No, I think there was a layover or a stop somewhere, I think, but yeah.
I've been on a 16.
That's a weird one.
I've been to Australia, which is a 16, I think.
Yeah. I've never done that flight, man. I got to do that at some point. I've never done one of those comedy festivals in Australia or South Africa. I heard South Africa, that one's fucking amazing, and the Australian one is like... How long has that been going on? Like 15 years, 20 years now?
It's really bad for you.
What, the Australian
flight? Flight is bad for you. I just did the Brazil one where I went 11 hours from Brazil to Miami and then 5 hours from Miami, and I got sick. And I never get sick. It's just like...
Flying will make you sick.
Yeah, it's terrible for you. And you're constantly around other people's fucking diseased coffee breath and shit, and people are spitting and touching things.
It's like being on a submarine, but there's really no glory to it, you know?
It's just super bad for you. There's something about that recirculated air, too, that just really diminishes you.
It's supposed to be better.
And flying just stinks, and it's getting harder and harder.
No, Brian, it's not supposed to be better.
No, I saw a special on it that they said that the air filtration systems in planes are so amazing that it really does. It's actually really good for you.
Well, this is what it is. That air that comes out of those little tubes is actually a very clean air. Those things you blow on you, that's actually very clean.
Oh, that's good.
However, you are in a tube.
Right.
Where there's no fresh air, and you are recycling everyone's breath. And that's the problem.
That's why you have that tube on you the whole time.
Well, that can help you, but the amount of air that's in that is limited, and it's all being recycled with people breathing out. That's the issue, is you're constantly around other people's breath, and it doesn't really have anywhere to go. And so there is like a recirculation, there is a filtration, but you're still going to take in breaths filled with other people's shit.
Yeah.
There's no way around it. That's why the farts smell so bad on airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
Someone farts on an airplane, it's not even like farting in a restaurant. It's like farting in your face. It's like, it just is nowhere for it to go.
That's why, like, when you're stuck on the tarmac for like 5 hours and you realize, like, this plane is built only for the air.
Yeah.
That, like, the toilets start backing up and there's no air and you feel trapped. I get incredibly claustrophobic on the plane. So, you know, once that door shuts, I'm like, fuck, dude. Now I'm in this tube now for the next 6-7 hours. Ugh.
Well, it's a part of our job to be on planes on a regular basis. It's not the best part.
But back in the old days, like when it was all like just touring like road, like driving cars, you and another guy, I've done like a lot of that. And there is like, even though it takes a while, there is some fun to that, you know. Like,
this fine if it's a good comic. It's a fun guy. I did a lot of main gigs with a lot of Boston guys. We did a lot of driving up to Vermont and shit like that, 4 and 5 hour drives.
Yeah.
It was great. It was a lot of fun.
But now everybody's so like, you know. PC and all that kind of stuff, it's like, yeah, let's stop and, you know, go apple picking. There's really no, like, there's no, like, adventure to it, you know?
Everybody's so PC.
Yeah, it's like, nobody ever I want to pick up a Delph China set for my mom.
You need to, I'll go on tour with you.
Okay. I feel like, you feel like you're the last of a dying breed. Self-destructive comics.
Yeah, yeah. It's like it's kind of hard to explain to the new guys, like the road to them. You know, like a lot of them, like I hate the road. I've done two gigs. I'm like two, and you hate it already. You got to do about 2,000 before you get that real good hate of it. You know.
Yeah, Joey Diaz and I have been on some fucking adventures across this great land of ours.
That guy has been on the road like before. I don't know, before the road. I mean, like, he must have started out working, like, you know, state fairs and shit like that. I mean, he's hardcore.
Yeah, he's like that Johnny Cash song, The Highwayman. He's done this in other lives. He's done this in other lives.
But I bet you he's like me. He's probably more comfortable on the road than he is ever at home, you know, because I never feel like at home. I'm like, ugh.
Joey's most comfortable, I think, on stage.
Oh, okay.
You know, I think he just wants to, I think he just loves getting out there.
Yeah.
He's just a hustler, too. You know, Joey's always got something going on.
Yeah, well, that's the cool thing about it, man. It's like, you know, the good thing about comedy is that, like, you know, every day is a new day, you know? Yeah. And, like, you can, you know, it's really up to you to make it happen. And everybody's like, if I only knew the right guy and if somebody read the screenplay, it's like, yeah, but that's not about comedy. Comedy's about, like, getting funnier and just getting out there, really. That's what I tell everybody's like, how do I meet an agent? I'm like, why? So some guy cannot take your calls? It's like, right now you're doing more for your career going on doing 7 minutes than this douchebag's going to do for you ever. So, you know.
At the end of the day, it all becomes about that engine. The engine that propels your life is your work, your comedy that you create.
Yeah.
And everybody is wrapped up on getting auditions and getting a show and getting a series and getting all these things, which ultimately are not the best thing for your stand-up.
Yeah, no. Oh, it hurts your stand-up.
Yeah.
You were on a sitcom.
Sitcoms kill your stand-up.
You were on a sitcom, right? It's like, did you feel funnier after you did? No.
I felt less funny, first of all, because I had to work long hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you were on the set long hours a day. And I got lazy, and I stopped writing material.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there was no encouragement. You know, no one thought. But the producer even said it to me once, like, why are you still doing stand-up? You're an actor now.
Yeah, I hate when they say that.
It's so crazy. But it's great money, and so that's why everybody wants to do it. But ultimately, the real money is in stand-up. I mean, the real happy money, because you're doing what you actually enjoy. Being on a bad sitcom, have you ever been on a bad sitcom?
Fuck. I've auditioned for every, I think, bad sitcom that never made it. But, I don't even do acting. Like, that's like the least thing I could give a shit about. I'm like in my late 40s now, and I'm like, dude, I could give a shit if I ever get on The Big Bang Theory or any of that stuff. I know guys are like, if only I could get on there. And I'm like, you know, I'd rather be able to say what I want to say, when I want to say it, where I want to say it, than for low money, than be on a sitcom where I walk out and it's like, watch out, fellas, it's time for break. You know, like some line that has been overwritten by a bunch of guys I don't know sitting in a writer's room, you know? So maybe I'm a dick. I don't know. It's just like it never excited me enough to do that. And like I always was like pegged as the guy, like the setup to the funny guy, and I hate that. Like you know, what are you doing, Waldo? And then he would say the funny line, and I'd be like, wamp, wamp. You know,
we were I think a lot of comics sort of led in that direction in the 80s when you saw like Roseanne and Tim Allen and these guys go to have series, and Seinfeld and these series make millions and millions of dollars.
Absolutely.
So that became like a direction where everybody was sort of like thinking, well, I guess I got to do that. And then the idea of just being a stand-up was like, nobody appreciated that. Nobody was like, oh, he just wants to be a stand-up. They'd be like, why when you can do movies?
Right.
You know, why when you can do a sitcom? Why when you can do a television show?
But there are some guys who are like legitimately like, you know, I'm a stand-up, but I'm an actor. So I give it to them. Like,
oh, yeah,
I'm not putting
them
down.
It.
But like Seinfeld, who was really a stand-up, who became an actor, went back to stand-up. So like that's what he does now. He does his stand-up. Roseanne, I think, is like so creative, you know, like all over the place that she could do stand-up if she wanted to. But I think once you make that TV money and then going back to stand-up, you feel like you failed. But you shouldn't, because it's like it's fun and like you should see the fun in it, you know?
Well, it's sort of like the only art form where you're expected to transition and turn from a caterpillar into a butterfly.
True.
Whereas if you're a rapper, nobody's expecting you to go into movies. You might go into some movie. But
right.
Most rappers just essentially stay rappers, and that's where people love them.
Well, but I think all the rapper guys, they want to be like an action hero, you know, like kind of guy in their head.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, because I don't think they're making that much money rapping anymore. Nobody makes any money, you know,
off the CDs.
Yeah,
off I think of that they do on tour though.
Yeah, on tour
that's
they
where
do,
the real
yeah.
money is.
But yeah, I think they definitely want to, and they have that incredible rapper confidence. They're like always so confident, you know. Comics aren't that confident, you know.
The opposite of comedy.
Yeah, exactly. You can't have like a guy who's self-hating himself as he blows away a dude where
you can't
AK-47. Like,
you can if you're black.
Okay, that's true. There is a racial thing to it.
It's
a
cultural
true.
Thing.
Exactly. You know,
it's very different.
That's why, like, you know, I would say that comics who do sitcoms, and I know a lot of them who did sitcoms, when they come back to the comedy, they're always like, you know, I'm a little rusty. I'm like, are you really? I mean, it's just like you should have done stand-up the whole way through, you
yeah.
know, and it wouldn't have been that way.
I know a lot of guys who quit. Kevin James basically quit.
Really?
You know, he occasionally goes on and does these shows with Ray Romano, but once he started acting,
wow.
he just really doesn't have the time for it
anymore. Yeah, he does a lot of movies, too. A lot yeah. of, like, kids-friendly movies. And that to me would be the worst, to be like in a kids-friendly movie and then you have this dirty, filthy act. You know, like, I think that happens to Tracy Morgan a lot, where they see him on 30 Rock, which is like a, you know, it's a smart, funny show, and then they see him live, and he is just fucking out of control.
Right.
You know?
I did two of Kevin's movies. I've done, I did Zookeeper, which is a family-friendly movie, and then I did Here Comes the Boom, another family-friendly, but I played myself in that one.
Okay.
But you know, Kevin's been my friend since we started out together.
He was a great comic, too, yeah.
Very funny comic. That's why it kind of bums me out that he doesn't do it that much. You
yeah.
know, a lot of people don't even know.
I started with him on Long Island, and he, like, always knew who he was.
East Side?
East Side and Governors, and he, him and his brother, who also is a comic, Gary
yeah.
Valentine,
yeah.
they were there all the time, and, you know, but Kevin and Ray, they kind of, like, you know, are like soul brothers in a way, even though both of them are the whitest guys.
Right.
And they kind of have the same comedy. You know, it's like very, it's endearing.
They don't want to offend anybody.
They don't want to offend anybody, but it's still like Ray's comedy is still really so well written. Like, you know, from what I remember from the past. I don't know.
I saw him recently. Now. He did one of those, Kevin and Bean do an April Foolishness show in LA, and he did it, I think, 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And he was great.
Yeah, he should be on the road because he's a funny guy, man.
Yeah,
I know he's got a lot of kids and
does the Mirage every now and then.
All right,
they him and Kevin do like gigs together, and I think he was doing a new show, but it was like a drama, right? Wasn't he doing like a
yes, he was. It was not Men Behaving Badly, but Men of a Certain Age. That's
yeah,
what it was. Executive produced by Michael Royce, who is a guy I started doing comedy with, and he's a great guy. He worked on Louis' first show on HBO. He's worked on Ray's show. He's a great writer, and he was a comic, too. So, you know,
how
cool.
did you get from stand-up to this idea of doing porn, showing old? Was this your idea?
Yeah, this is my idea. And Stuart Bailey, who is the executive producer of the show, we pitched it to another network, and they said no. And, you know, we made the pilot with them. And this is years and years ago now. So they said no, but it's too dirty, but it's funny. And then I went over to Showtime, and that's what we did. And it really is kind of like you did it. It's a two-dimensional show. It's me and the comic ragging on the clips and, like, basically just dick joking it around, unscripted. We didn't script anything. And then we go right to, you know, the tribute part of the show, which is bringing out the legend. Or in some shows, I bring out young porn. So it's like the last show of the season. I'm going to give it away now. We got like Asa Akira, Jesse Jane, Caden Cross, Shawn Michaels, who's one of the coolest dudes ever to do porn. You know, he's black. But he is so cool. And it's really weird for the dudes in porn, especially like guys like Shawn Michaels. You got to give him a tip of the hat because, like, you know, they are definitely, you couldn't have porn without them, but yet they don't get any of the credit, any of the money that the chicks do. So it was great to have a guy like there, like that on the show. And he's so smooth and so just like charming and interesting. And then Andy Dick was on the show and Adrian Curry, who is really, really cool. Just a guy's chick.
Was Andy Dick sober?
Andy Dick was sober, and he was a little disappointed because I didn't have much retro gay porn, but I did the best I could. And there's a lot of retro gay porn out there. It's just I wasn't sure what the network would think about it. You know, guy on guy, you know.
Peter North is a funny one because he's famous for loads.
Yeah.
Famous for giant loads.
Absolutely.
Frothy loads.
It's pretty ridiculous the size of that guy's loads.
Oh, amazingly. Like, just whatever it is, a banana clip. he has on the bottom of his dick. There's like 50, 60 loads in there.
Yeah.
I tell you, Joe, that ZMA shit really has affected my loads. It's humongous now.
Zinc. Really?
Yeah. Zinc and magnesium. It boosts your testosterone and makes your loads more frothy.
See, that's the cool thing about you guys' show. It's like helpful tips, you know, like, well, Dr. Oz stuff.
We're trying to spread a little positivity there, David Tell. We're trying to enrich the world. We're trying to power up people. Get them excited about life, goddammit.
But
get
the
them
dudes
fired up.
Dudes who do porn, like
Ron,
you know,
Jeremy.
Ron Jeremy, of course. One. We have him coming out. Herschel Savage. Who else?
John Holmes.
John Holmes, not here.
You know what was interesting? How Ginger Lynn was very proud of the fact that John Holmes always got it up with her.
Yeah.
Because that was the thing with John Holmes. He had this giant rubber dick.
Huge.
And it was a lot of times it would be like half hard. Mm-hmm. But with her, she's like, he was always excited.
That's good.
She was very, very proud of that.
Yeah, it's, I would, like, be too.
She's a real, like, she's a real trooper.
Yeah, she really is.
She, like, she was proud of her work. That wasn't just, like, punching in at Wendy's.
Exactly. You
know? She was doing some art.
And, you know, with the dudes in the porn, like, there's so many great ones. Eric Edwards, who I didn't even know he was into it, but if we do it again, I'm definitely getting him on it. Randy, what's his name? Up and comers. You know what I'm talking about. Randy, blah, 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 blah. He's known for up-and-comer series.
I don't know.
He was the one who banged Jenna Jameson, up-and-comers number 11. It's probably one of the best-known scenes in porn. So,
oh,
I'd love,
okay,
to get him on.
You're talking about Jenna's first one?
Yeah.
Yeah, Randy, I forget his name, but he's not a good-looking fella.
I think he's good-looking.
He doesn't have a very big dick. Seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, he's like a regular guy.
Yeah, regular guy.
And, you know, like you said, Peter North, Joey Silveria, he's a genius. He's great.
It must have been a weird time for those guys, that 80s porn, because there was no real 70s porn. I mean, it was so rare. It was like, you know, you had Deep Throat and Behind the Green Door or whatever. Was that movie?
Yeah, Behind the Green Door.
Whatever it was.
Randy West.
Sorry.
Randy
about
West.
That.
There
Thank
you.
Go.
Thank you. So, I mean, all of a sudden, these guys come along in like the 1980s, and it's just crazy porn. They become stars. It's the VHS era. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a world that didn't exist before, because the porn that was done before that literally had to be streamed as a movie. You had to have a projector.
Yeah, it was a movie.
Nobody had a fucking projector, and they're going to go reel to reel, and ugh, too much nonsense. But when a VHS tape came along, it changed that game. You could just stick that sucker right in the VCR, which everybody had in the 80s, and everybody started watching porn. And there was the whole section that you would go to with the video. I remember my mother was very upset when that came out. Like, oh, this is just right here?
You had a great first porn story. It was like, you know, I asked everybody who comes on the show, I go, like, do you remember the first time you saw porn? That's like the big end of the interview. I'm not an interviewer, you know, I'm not like Charlie Rose or anything. But your story was interesting, where you said, like, you were at a buddy's. You went over either a buddy's house, or like you just found his porn or something like that. It was like an uncomfortable situation.
I don't remember it.
But it was a very good story, and you know, I'm going to turn it into an animated series.
Awesome.
Everybody's first porn.
I mean, I remember finding porn in the woods, like magazines.
Yes, we both talked about it. I was in the Scouts, and they would be like, fucking
Well, I lived in Florida, and we lived near this. I lived near in Gainesville, Florida, and it was my dad.
You
was
and Todd
the
Barry?
University of, really?
Yeah. I think Todd Barry's from there.
It's a lot of alligators around there. There's a lot of woods. We'd go out in the woods. Me and my friends, we'd find like snapping turtles and shit. And we would make slingshots, and we would always find porn. Always, it would be wet bags of porn, like a plastic bag tucked under a log. You know, we found a bunch of that shit. It's weird. It's weird. It went from that. That was the only way you get it. It's magazines. You know, and dudes always had to be half hard. They couldn't be fully hard. They had rules. Like, you couldn't have a full hard on. So scene after scene would be this girl who's like pretending to be in total moaning ecstasy, spreading her pussy apart, and the dude would like lay his dick on her like a drowning victim. You know, it's like this poor like dead dick. I was like, what is the message here?
I think it's so important for young kids to see magazine porn, because it really is. First of all, it's adult, but it's not like real porn, so it's not like you're not going to blow his head out. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like just enough. You know what I'm saying? Like it's like the training wheel porn. You know,
it gets you started.
Now, yeah, like you don't want your kid to immediately go into like hi-fi, Wi-Fi download porn. You know, it's like, here's a magazine. You know, it's Hustler. It's great. Take a look. You know,
I remember that rough feeling that you'd get when you found a Hustler. Like your heart would race. He's like, whoa. You'd be, you know, turning the pages.
Oh,
and,
man,
like,
jerking off, to just reading the art, reading the jokes.
Yeah, and there'd be like a drip of saliva from his tongue to her dick. You'd be like, what the fuck am I seeing? This is crazy. She's going to suck his dick. She's going to do it.
Well, the cool thing about the girls today in porn, if I know we're talking way too much about porn, but I appreciate it. It's very few places where you can talk about porn. So we had Joanna Angel on and Rob Zombie and Judah Friedlander to do this like horror porn. And I have like the worst horror movie porn. It's like, you know, the good titles I couldn't get rights to, and the ones that I have are just like joking, cheesy, fucking bad porn. But Joanna, who's like a, you know, super hot punk chick, you know, tatted up, really cool, and a great businesswoman, by the way. She runs her own company, makes her own films. You know, she's watching this porn, and she's like, you know, this is horrible. Like, this is like, you don't shoot dick that way. And it was cool to get her perspective on it because she's a director, you know. But, you know, I was like, wouldn't that be cool if, like, you know, they could redirect these porns, like, to today's standards? I think it would be almost impossible, you know.
That would be a good idea.
It really would be cool if they could, like, whatever that is, you know,
they don't
IMAX it or something.
They don't remake porn, do they? They don't, like...
They
like,
reloop it a lot.
Well, they did a lot of, like, Debbie Does Dallas's, and they did a, you know, they've done the same movie, like, over with different people.
Yeah, once they hit, a theme that works, like, deep throat, sore throat, sweet throat, they do, like, a million versions of it, you know?
It is different if you watch the old porns compared to today. Like, they are definitely better at filming shit and showing you more and better angles and stuff. Like, a lot of the old porn was, like, a little awkward.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't really see what was going on. They, like, what looks good and what feels good is two different things sometimes. And so sometimes, like, someone has to, like, turn sideways and they're having sex in, like, an angle, like a sideways angle, just so they could show you the genitals better.
Right.
Whereas they didn't really do that nearly as much in the old days. Brian's leaving. He's done with this shit. He's got to go jerk off.
He just went totally.
He can't take it anymore. He's calling it a piss, but it's going to be white.
I think he's going to rub it out.
He's going to bang one off.
But I think with the old porn that that doesn't happen today is that you have a lot of guys who did old porn that were really actors, you know? And that,
really?
That the old porn was like to pay the bills. And today, like, you have a lot of guys who are just like everything and they do porn, you know? Like,
right.
They're, you know, personal trainers, they're all these different things. They all want to be actors, I think. I think at some point everybody wants to be an actor who does porn because they got amazing confidence to be able to fuck in front of other people. That's like just like balls, you know?
Something happens, I think, to a lot of people when they first come to L.A. where they have this idea that they're going to make it in show business, they're
right.
going to be an actor, and then they get out here and they see what a process it is.
Oh.
They see the infinite field of gears and machines in front of them they're going to have to get ground through before they pop out on the other side. And some people just, they lose hope in it pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's the thing, man. There's like all those people who were like an extra on like an 80s show, like A-Team or something like that. I'm always wondering, like, what happened to that guy? What happened to this chick? You know, like, where are they, you know? But I assume they're around in L.A., you know, just making it happen, you know, just trying to get day-to-day, bill-to-bill, whatever.
Yeah, isn't it funny that when you used to be someone famous and then you aren't, it's sad. But if you see someone and they were never famous, it's not sad.
You know,
if it's a normal, if regular guy with a regular job at a deli, you never get sad when you see him. But if you went and, you know, one of the guys from Different Strokes is in a deli, you'd feel sad.
I used to get that all the time. And, you know, I'll only say this to you because I feel like we're both, you know, in the same kind of boat here. It's like after I stopped doing the Insomniac show, people used to come up to me all the time and go like, what happened and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, we were just done doing the show, you know, and like, they're like, how could you ever be done doing TV? You do TV forever. And to some degree, they're right. But I was also like, I don't want it to be cheesed out, like where it keeps going and going and going. And people would be like, you know, come and see me live. And they're like, you know, like, this guy's a failure in show business. When they, in my head, they don't know that, like, I could give a shit about television. It was really about being able to do stand-up because I did stand-up before the show, during the show, after the show. And that was really my dream. Like, if somebody said to you, like, Dave, you can never do stand-up again, but you can have a shitty reality show, I'd be like, fuck you. I'm not going to do that. I mean, it's like I love the ability and freedom of doing stand-up. And,
yeah, there are a lot of people that think you're a loser, though, if you have a show
it's their dream.
Canceled.
It's their – and mine wasn't canceled. It was just like we're done doing it.
Did you get tired of doing that show, too, because people were constantly trying to get hammered with you?
There was that, but there was also, like, the real, like – and I'm pretty business-like, you know, when I work. It's like it was getting harder and harder instead of easier and easier to get access to things outside of bars, like, you know, working late, stuff – Like really just cool, like events. Like we would either get there like a week late, a week early.
For folks who don't know, Insomniac was a show that Dave did.
Yeah, on Comedy Central.
It was on Comedy Central, where it was really cool. He would do his show, and then he would go out and, you know, the idea nightlife. Would be that he's an insomniac. You go see what the fuck's going on at night.
But I really am an insomniac. And the sad part about it is being, you know, I don't drink anymore. So it's like being up for 3 days editing porn and like having to do radio and all that kind of stuff. There's no fun in that kind of up. You know what I'm saying? But
you don't like doing radio?
I love doing radio when it's somebody like you or like ONA, Stern, like where I get to like just talk about other shit and just be funny. A lot of these stations that they have me on sometimes, like these soccer mom stations, there's a lot of stuff you can talk about, but then there's also like, you know, they want jokes. Like when I do yeah. Bob and Tom, I love doing those guys because they are older dudes. They know porn. They know all the porn things. And like, you know, there's definitely some standards there, but it's not, I can work with it. I love it, you know, and I like being able to be, I'm pretty good on my feet. You know, I can talk about a lot of different things going on in the news, whatever, politics, all that kind of stuff. And I like that. It's exciting and it tests me. But when it's all about like, you know, you did this and like, you know, give us a setup for, you know, the football game and shit like that. I don't like it. You know,
there's not that many really good radio people.
No, that's why the podcasts are cool.
A dozen or so in the whole country where you look forward to them. There's a few guys and different radio stations where you go, oh, this is going to be a fun show. But it's a lot of bad, unentertaining.
There's two guys in San Francisco, the gay guys.
Those guys are amazing.
And Johnny Dare, who I call Johnny Blaze last time. I just did his show. He's cool because Johnny knows the porn people, he knows the business, and he's a lot of fun, you know? So I think it's great that, you know...
Yeah, he has a fun show.
Yeah, that's Kansas City, right? Yeah. Johnny Dare.
Yeah,
Shout out.
There's a bunch of good radio still, you know? Uh-huh. Kevin and Bean in L.A. is still one of the best.
Yeah.
There's just... You know, it's a dying market. The radio is slowly getting absorbed. When I say a dying thing, what I mean is like that morning fun personality that really Howard Stern invented. That's not that common anymore. Like that's slowly being phased out by these Jack FM channels and canned sort of shows and people that, you know, quite honestly, they don't really have that engaging a personality. They just know how to keep things moving along and sound like a radio host, play the right songs, take the quick breaks.
You would know it better than me. What is that like computer that tells them, like, you know, they can tell when people aren't listening and listening? So they're they're kind of like stifled by that. So there's probably a lot of cool dudes who now have to kind of like suck the man's dick to keep the show on the air, and it sucks.
Yeah, man Willie and Willie in Denver.
Yeah,
the thing that they try to do when you try to put a formula to something, you can't put a formula to something being entertaining. And the only way you find out if someone's entertaining is you got to let them be themselves.
Right.
And when you start fucking with this and tweaking that and changing that, people that are creative understand what's going on there, that it's a stifling sort of, but the people that are uncreative, they just trying to fix it. We're just trying to make more money with this. We're just trying to make this a better radio show. We need a girl. We need a sidekick. The number show, women don't feel represented on your show. Like, it's got to be good. It's got to be entertaining. And the only way to find out if it's good or entertaining is someone's actually got to be allowed to create the show. It's like it's got to be the vision of one or a couple of people. As soon as you start adding producers and non-creative people in there, you're going to fuck it up. It's going to fuck it all up. There's no way around it. Every show I've ever done where the show wasn't doing well and the producers came in and the executives came in and they had notes. Oh, those fucking notes were terrible and they ruined everything.
Well, you know, like you said, it's got to be someone's vision. Like Ron and Fez. These guys, like, I listen to them, you know, and, like, they definitely have a point of view or perspective, and there's, like, definitely a chemistry with the people in the room there, so it's intriguing to watch. Same thing with, you know, Nick DiPaolo and Artie Lang. They got a sports show on, and, like, sports, unless you're a hardcore sports guy, you know, it's kind of hard to listen to it, but they do, like, a fun show about sports, and both of them, who I respect the most as comics and as just cool dudes. It's cool that they got a thing together and they have a great, I guess you could say, like back and forth chemistry. So
DiPaolo is one of the most underrated comics
exactly.
in the world.
Exactly.
He's amazing. DiPaolo was one of the guys when I was starting out, I was like an open micer. Nick was already in it a couple of years, I think, 1 or 2 years. And he was already solid. He was already working. And I remember he would be the first guy. He's this big fucking muscular football
player. Good looking guy,
handsome motherfucker with a full head of hair. And I was like, oh, you can can look like that and still be funny? Like, I thought you had to, you know, be like awkward or strange or.
His stuff is so well written, and it comes at it from such an interesting perspective. For a Boston guy, like, you always feel like he's a true Boston guy.
Yeah.
But his stuff is like so sophisticatedly fucking evil. I love it.
And
you know,
angry.
And like pure anger, true anger. And I always find that's like the ultimate funny. Like, just like somebody who's like really fucking angry about something. You know, I like that. So.
The world needs more angry comedy.
Yeah, and Nick DiPaolo, dude, check him out because he's fucking cool. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of young guys coming up now that I work with who I think also have the same heart and soul of these, like, you know, Big J, Kurt Metzger.
Metzger's very funny.
Mike Vecchione. Kurt has some of the funniest shit I've ever heard. And, you know, he's just now working his way through the system. But, you know, I worked with him in Nyack at the Levity Live. That's a great club, by the way.
Oh, what did that used to be?
I don't know. It's in the mall, so it was some kind of IMAX or something.
There was a gig in Nyack way back in the day. I wonder if it's the same gig. But Levity Live is like, does the same that do Stand Up Live in Phoenix.
I couldn't fill it out. I couldn't fill it out, but I brought...
is it a big place?
It's probably like 500 seats. And
they're making these big, giant places now.
Yeah, but do you like it? Because you could definitely feel that kind of
thing. I did the Stand Up Live at Phoenix. I
love that
loved
club.
It. That's it was the
club.
Biggest club that I've ever done. Like, it felt like...
Cool
but
staff.
It still felt like a club. It didn't feel like a theater. It's
and awesome. I like working downtown Phoenix. You know, everybody used to play the Tempe Improv, which was fun. But I like downtown Phoenix because that's like the heart of the fucking... You know, that town is... That's a hardcore town.
It's a crazy town.
Yeah, so you get like a whole different crowd now. It's not just college kids and whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
That's a Wild West town.
It is, yeah. You can carry a gun there.
Yeah, people don't realize how nutty Phoenix is as a town. We were in Scottsdale. I've never told this story on the air before, I don't think, but we came out of a club once, and there was all these people laying on the ground. It was really weird. A guy had gotten his key from the valet, and he was hammered. And he just plowed through this line of people and sent people flying through the air. And we came out like literally seconds after it happened. And it was so strange because there was this eerie silence. We walked out and it was literally seconds after it happened and people were lying on the ground.
Shit.
And the car was stopped and no one believed what they had seen. That this guy had just stomped on the gas and ran a bunch of people over.
Shit.
Sent some people flying. I believe people got like seriously, seriously injured. I think people might have even died from it.
When was that?
It was, man, I guess it had to be the early 2000s.
Oh.
Like 2000, 2001. It was when I think I first started doing the Tempe Improv in the late 90s. So it could have been around there, too. It could have been like 99, maybe.
That was a great club. That was
a great club.
That was one of the best. I'm going to play the D.C. Improv, and I think that's the best improv in the country.
The Improv in D.C.?
Yeah, Irvine and D.C. are probably the last two really great ones.
Brea is very underrated, too. So
I just played Brea, but I couldn't fill it. Couldn't fill it up.
How dare you?
I know. I felt bad because I love the people that
people
work
didn't
there.
Know. If they knew, they would be seeing you. That's,
I don't know
see,
about
that's
that.
The thing. Fuck the fuck out of here. That's the thing about this social media stuff is like it allows people to know where you're going to be.
I think it's the beach crowd, too. I don't know. I always blame it on like,
crowd?
You know, like it's near Huntington Beach. So it must be like, you know, the surfer people didn't, you know, come out.
They didn't
something.
Connect with you?
I don't know. I never do any more excuses except I will ask what else is going on in town. And if it's high school football and you're still not selling out, then I'm like, shit, I better fucking call a cousin and get a job doing something because this is not happening.
Dude, stop it. You just need to get more active on Twitter.
You just need a podcast.
If you just a podcast would be great. Or let us know anytime you have a show.
Well,
we'll tweet it for you.
You and I were just talking. We got to do, like, I just want to hang and do a show with you, dude.
I would love to do that. I would love to do that.
It's not about money. It's just about, I want to, like, get in front of your crowd. I feel like your crowd would get my shit immediately.
They would love you, 100%.
And I would step it up. I would not walk through the show. I would give you my A game.
I believe you would.
Not just a couple of midget jokes and, you know, whatever, Obama.
But either way, man, the people that listen to the show would love to see you wherever you are. So just tell me where you're going to be, and I'll tweet it.
Well, I'm going to San Diego this weekend, and I don't even really know the club, but I'm looking forward to it because I haven't played.
San Diego?
Yeah.
Is it American Comedy Club or is it the other one?
Oh, shit.
The Comedy Madhouse.
I think it's the Madhouse.
It's supposed to be great.
Yeah, so I'm into doing it, and I'm going to be selling Dave's old porn shit there, too. So
if
you want a hat or a shirt or some booty shorts.
See, I
guarantee
you.
Yeah, show them the hat. There you go. So I'll be doing that shit, so I'll be hanging out. And,
it's more that people don't know you, man. A service we offer here at the Joe Rogan Experience
there you go.
Is we use my Twitter, and like we sold out, Brian Callen sold out Philly
really?
In advance.
Another
week in at Helium. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's never done that before. He said it was just from Twitter, putting it on Twitter.
I had two Columbus sold out shows because of you.
It's
you guys are the man. You are the kingmakers. Comedy.
Well, we've figured out a way to get through the fence, and now we're just letting other cool people through the fence. That's found a hole.
I appreciate it. I was speaking for the other comics. We appreciate what you do, and anything that helps good, cool people come see really raw, hardcore comedy is good. It's good for the industry. It's good for the comics. And it's also, you know, let's face it, it's we're ending in, nobody has money, so you might as well just come and, you know, check it out.
Well, it's worth doing. Look, stand-up comedy in its best form is one of the most entertaining things in show business. In my opinion, if I had a choice between seeing a great comic and seeing anything else, a movie, a band, I would love comedy over all those things, like as an art form. And it ain't easy to get right. It's not easy. We all know a lot of guys we don't want to watch. We all know a lot of guys, we walk in the room, we see them on stage, they're wander out of there. That's how the audience feels too. So when we find something that's good, we promote the shit out of it.
Well, now that I've been doing it over 26 years, I've never appreciated more the people that get the comedy than now. Like, you know, back in the day, it was like, you know, the drinking party frat guys. Now it's like they're older now, they're all married, they bring their wives in, they're like, what the fuck is this kind of shit? But I really appreciate the comedy fan who gets the jokes and like sees, like, you know, hey dude, I saw you with Mitch Hedberg and Lewis Black on tour, and like, you know, that was the best tour, and you know, I love Mitch and all kinds of, like, that kind of shit, like, I never get tired of. So, you know, I've gotten it a lot from, like, people who've seen you. They're like, you know, I heard you on Rogan's podcast. And it's really cool to hear you guys, you know, chew it up about the comedy. So there are definitely a lot of comedy fans out there. We just need you guys to, like, fucking come to the clubs, man.
Well, they just need to find out where you're at.
Okay.
I guarantee you that's a big part of it. There's a lot of people that are huge Dave Attell fans. They just wouldn't know that you're going to be somewhere.
Yeah,
you got to be
kind
really
of a dick.
There's only one way. It's like, to really reach people, it's got to be a social media thing. You have to have a website that you update on a regular basis. And you have to have Twitter. And
what about flyers?
That doesn't really only in parking lots.
Yeah, like, just hire a guy flyer for a couple hours.
Fucking flyer on my car yesterday. World famous psychic. I should give out her number on the air. Should I?
That was one of the funniest things I ever saw in airport security. Was a crystal ball. Like, somebody was trying to get a crystal ball airport security, and they took it from them. And you're like, the joke, of course, the easy joke. Didn't they know that they were, you know? But I mean, honestly, that was hilarious.
What did they think it was?
Some kind of bomb, a neutron EMT blast, fucking
nitrogen
space
ball,
yeah,
inside there. Did
Warlock.
You see that fucking explosion in Indianapolis?
I didn't get to see it yet.
Holy shit, dude! Some house exploded in Indianapolis.
Yeah, what was that?
Most likely a gas leak.
Oh, see,
that shit happens sometimes. It happened. There was another one on my message board. A guy was saying that one happened 4 miles from his house.
Wow.
And he said he could feel the blast on his chest.
Holy shit.
Yeah, from 4 miles away from his house. Yeah.
There it is. I
when
see
you
picture.
See what it looks like, that ain't shit. You got to see the overhead. There's an overhead shot that's unbelievable. It doesn't even make sense.
Oh, look at that, man. Like a drone strike. Look at that.
It looks crazier. Yeah, it looks just like a drone strike or like some sort of a missile strike. Go to images, and there's one large photo of an overhead image where it shows. There's one of them right there. Click on that one.
Here's a video of it.
Yeah, but go to the images, just because there's one image that's so insane. It just, you can't even wrap your head around how big the explosion was.
This?
I don't know if that's it. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Look at that.
Look
what
at those
the
houses.
Fuck? Dude, they're splinters. They're reduced to splinters. The house is fucking exploded.
What a heartache that must be. Like, you come in and you see your house is just fucking
pulverized.
Or if you
explode.
Yeah.
Or if it happens to you. Well, that's something that we have to remember, is that we have fucking gas pumping into our houses. It's amazing
that
doesn't happen on a regular basis.
Oh, here's a good gas story before I got a bolt. I got to go do other stuff. But
he's got another show to do.
Yeah, sorry, dude.
Craig,
I really
apologize.
Because I could stay here for fucking 9 hours and it would never get boring. But what I was going to say, my house, I thought I had a gas leak. So, you know, I get the handy guy come in and he's like, well, first of all, you don't have gas. And I'm like, you sure about that? And he goes, yeah, you don't. So then I'm like, why do I have this blinding headache? You know, because that's what I thought. Because with gas leak, you always think, I'm like, right. Oh, you know, like they always say, you're dizzy, blinding headache. I'm like, oh, okay, so I'm really just basically on deck for a stroke. So, you know, I went through the normal, like, you know, I was like, it's gas, it's not me. It's like, oh, no, my brain, I'm aneurysm, something's going
to
happen.
There. So you sent the guy in because you had a headache and you just assumed
yeah, I thought it was gas.
You didn't smell gas?
My place fucking reeks of just, it's horrible. So, I mean,
where do you live in New York?
I live in Manhattan, so you
what
know.
Part?
What's the address?
Okay, cool. Yeah,
which apartment?
I live in Battery Park, right near the memorial. No, it was washed out. Now it's an aquarium. No, but I live, you know, in the city, so I figured it was like, you know, they're on gas or something like that. And it turns out there's no gas there, and I was like, oh shit. Okay, so then this is just my neuro something, you know, about to be. I'll be eating, you know, baby food. Next time, you know,
shivoing it.
Yeah, exactly. Someone will be open the hangar door.
Do you live in the thick of it, where you look out your window, you just see nothing but skyscrapers?
Everything is skyscrapers. There's no good view anymore. You got to be like Donald Trump to have a view where you're just like a deck and you just laugh.
Yeah,
you know. But everyone wants to be on the park. I never got that whole idea. I like, you know, like I like being in a place where I can get in a cab and like get to the airport because I'm a comic, you know. It's like,
right.
It's all about like getting out of Manhattan, which is impossible now because the mayor shut down all these streets and like there's bike lanes, there's like, you know, unicycle lanes, there's like, you know, skip to my loo lanes. It sucks. So
this
you know,
is post hurricane, you mean?
No, this has like been period. The last 2 years where they made it more like walking friendly. And in Manhattan, honestly, you know, it's like you just it's so hard to get around to begin with. It just made it impossible.
Is it the only city that has cabs like that? Because I've never been to a city which dominated by cabs the way Manhattan is. I mean, I can't think of another place. That's so strange where they've just decided to like, look, you can't park. Forget it.
Don't
we'll
even
park
drive
for
it.
You. Don't yeah. even try it. Just yeah. let us take care of you.
Well, the cool thing about living in Manhattan is that you don't have to have a car because there's the subway and then there's cabs and then there's buses.
Yeah, but you're letting all these other people drive for you all the time.
Yeah, but I mean, come on, it's not like a limo. I mean, you know, you're some guy from Senegal. Is
right,
there,
but you got to trust this guy to just drive you around. You don't even know this guy.
True.
You
they never
the
know where they're going
car.
Either.
No. Well, it's also, it's a weird thing. You're constantly interacting with all these other people, like in close proximity, in cabs.
Well, that's why I like going to Minneapolis, because it's like the whitest town with the most African cab drivers. These are boy soldiers. You know, they like brought them over there, and like they're all cab drivers, and you know they know the town pretty well because they're pretty into not going back to wherever the fuck they're from. So they're on it. In New York, the guys are like, eh.
Do you remember that 1 year where they shot like 48 cab drivers in a year?
Shot. Oh, right. Yeah, that's right. It was like a serial.
Wow.
Cab.
Yeah, really?
It's really bad. Yeah. They were robbing cab drivers, so they would take, and that's one of the reasons why cab drivers would stop picking up urbans.
Really?
Stop picking up the urban kids, you know what I'm saying? Wink, wink. They would take them somewhere and they would just shoot them in the head and take all their money.
Wow.
It was really common. Like, I believe it was like 48 was like the record 1 year. And it was pretty spooky for these fucking cab drivers, especially those gypsy cabs, mm-hmm. you know? There's a lot of people that are operating as cab drivers that have like different licenses or no licenses, and they're just sort of sneaking around
and
giving people rides.
Undercover shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you mean you could just sneak around and give people rides. We got that in England. A guy gave us a ride. It wasn't even a cab driver.
But those guys
gave us a deal.
Don't they have to go to like cab driving school there? They have to learn the knowledge. You know, they have to like learn all the
in
street.
England?
Yeah.
I don't know.
In we London, I know they do. They have to like go through this incredible. They're also like their father was a cab driver and their father's father kind of bullshit.
When we were in, I think it was in Manchester with my friend Dave Bishop, we got a ride with some dude who was just a illegal cab driver.
Oh, really?
It was like a lot of illegal cabs because there's not enough regular cabs.
Wow.
So there's like these dudes who like have little navigation systems like, you need a ride? Okay, I got you. All right, $20. And you like negotiate with him and you just hop in his car. It was like a fucking Toyota Tercel.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's pretty common. I think it's illegal, though. I think they can get in trouble if they do it. But it's like there's so much demand for it because there's not enough cabs.
Hopefully porn stars start doing that since they're going to all be out of work soon.
Yeah.
So.
What is the deal now? How are the porn stars reacting to, for folks who don't know, Brian said they're going to be out of work because they just passed some crazy new laws.
Not out of work. It's just that they've made it a lot more annoying. Now they have to go outside of L.A. County to do porn.
They can go to Ventura
condoms.
County, though, can't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, yeah. They can. They have to all go out. But a lot of these girls...
Is it California statewide?
No, it's no. just Los Angeles
Los
County.
Los Angeles County, oh. yeah.
So all you're going to find is just made, more annoyed and more porn stars are going to be late to set. And it's going to...
I don't know. I when I do the AVNs, I'm sure that'll be like a topic or something like that. But they will keep making porn. They'll keep losing money making porn. There'll be more like, you know, illegal downloaded porn, all that kind of stuff. So it's a lose-lose proposition all the way around, and then making it, you know.
Explain to people who don't know what it is, what we're talking about.
Well, I don't really – I'm not from here, so I kind of know they have to wear condoms.
It's
now,
Prop B, which was – I think it was Prop B, but it passed. And what that means is they have to wear condoms now. If they're doing a blowjob, they have to have, like, the mouth condom.
Wow.
But what sucks is they had all these hidden things built into it, meaning, like, if you're married at home – and you want to go on My Free Cams or whatever,
do a webcam show,
you have to have like a permit that costs up to like something ridiculous, like $60,000 just to do that. Just to have porn with your own wife webcam. So there's like all these like hidden things that they put in there on top of it. And everyone knows that AIDS is not real. So
yeah,
well, you know, according to Dr. Peter Duesberg, but we are not really, we really shouldn't be saying AIDS is not real.
You know, the thing about making porn now is like there's such little money in it. Like, I think a lot of girls think like, I'll just do porn for a while and that'll be like this amazing amount of money and then I'll go off and do other things. But porn is like, I'd say it would be like working like the maitre d' at like a fancy restaurant. You're making that kind of money, but you're doing it in like an afternoon. But like, you know, instead of working a whole week, you're going to make that much money. And they work scene to scene unless they're a contract girl.
Right.
And the contract girls probably make some more money and they also get a lot more publicity. But unless the girls actually control their image and own their material, their chances of making the sizable amount of money, which they're due, by the way, they are definitely due money, it's very low. And, you know, I think the industry itself is going through a big transition about, like, what are we going to do? How are we going to make the net work for us? Because it definitely works for the people watching, you know that. I mean, there would be no internet without porn, you know that.
Well, it's an interesting thing the way it happened where they all of a sudden didn't have an outlet to make money anymore.
Yeah.
There's like no more DVD sales. They just completely went away.
I still buy DVDs. I'm like the last guy, yeah.
Well, so what do you think, what is the drop-off? Like, it was an enormous drop-off. Because I used to have a lot of porn producers, a lot of guys used to come to jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Used to train at John Jock's place in the Valley. And they were rich as fuck. They had these big balling cars. And those guys, a lot of them lost their houses, got their houses repossessed. That was really common.
I think in porn too, people live for the moment. So there's probably a lot of guys who have money, but they, you know, like want to show it off.
Oh yeah,
kind of like rapper type dudes.
Yeah, definitely.
And you know, they think the money's gonna always be coming in, and like, you know, might as well buy that car and like a boat. And all
oh yeah.
Kind of stuff. And then a lot of the girls also live kind of high up there, and you know, now they realize they're like, you know, I really should save some money.
But at least the girls are still getting some money.
Right.
The guys, the producers, that shit's done, man. It's over. I don't know how they make money now.
I have no idea who's making money and how it's being made. I know that there was a big buyout on a lot of these companies where now they're all kind of under one flag, and that it's good and bad for porn, where, like, you know, a lot of these independent producers have been bought out. Hopefully they made some money, like a .com kind of thing, but I doubt it. And, you know, now it's someone else's headache, you know, the whole, like, you know, how you get it out of there, distribution, all that kind of stuff. So it's an interesting business because, you know, I don't know much about the actual making of the porn. I just know about the licensing and all that kind of stuff. And that a lot of these titles, you know, it's a very gray area, you know, in terms of, like, who owns what. Who can show what, and at the end of the day, it's all going to end up on the net, and people are just going to watch for free. So, you know, all that money you're spending for a lawyer, you realize you're like, I don't know, you know, is this worth it? But you want to be on the up and up, and you want the business to make money, and I do. I really want, you know, this show is about tributizing not only the old porn stars, but making it a cool place for young ones to come out and show everybody that they're funny and cool, and they're just... You don't need to see them naked without them being interesting, and that, you know, it's great for comics to roll with this kind of shit since we all know the porn. And it's very important for me that this show works for the industry, you know, like, and at the AVNs, when I meet the people, they go, oh, I love the show. I love what you're doing for porn. And I never really got it, but now I get it because it's like it's a place for the people to see them do something besides fuck. And
yeah, to see them in a positive light too.
Exactly. You know.
It's a weird thing with us with morals where people look down on porn in a strange way. Yet it gets seen and used by so many fucking people. If you look at the numbers, the amount of people that are involved in watching porn is fucking staggering. The amount of porn downloads, supposedly 40%. Or somewhere around there of the internet's entire traffic.
You're not lying, yeah, dude.
So what's crazy to me is that industry, when the internet boom came along, that industry was essentially gutted, took the legs right off of it. Mm-hmm. The industry fell apart. People were completely out of the business. People lost jobs like crazy.
Right.
But those jobs were never deemed to be legitimate, so there was never any talk of a bailout. There's never any talk of government assistance. But Chevy's okay. Yeah. We have to save Chevy. Chevy's important. Chevy makes cars. True. We can't lose Chevy jobs. And so they went in to save Chevy, or GM, but they didn't do shit about the porn business. They just let it die.
They'll always be porn, and they'll always be a porn business, but they are scraping by. And
bank bailouts, absolutely.
Exactly.
Porn bailouts, no fucking way.
I don't even know how they do it. Like, I don't know how they do. Have backers? Do they, you know, is this like, you know, just some money they found, like from, you know, jungle gold digging? I don't know how they do it. But
has there been a business that fell apart that's that big of a business that was that almost completely evaporated in such a short period of time?
The porn,
besides
I can't think of one.
The music business, I guess.
Yeah, porn and music, and also to some degree, I guess, the comedy. Like, you know, comedy is...
I don't think so. I don't think comedy's really been affected by it in a negative way.
I don't know. I'd say the downloads and all that kind of stuff, you know.
I think it helps us. I think it makes people want to come see us live.
I hope so.
I think there's... For artists, I think it's switched to a live performance model for music artists. Mm-hmm. But for porn, man, what are they going to do? Fuck live? Maybe that's what they should do. Maybe they should have live fuck shows.
If this was Estonia, yeah, they would be doing it.
Why don't they do that anyway?
I don't know.
Have a live fuck show. Why can't, like, wouldn't you pay money to go see Dana DiArmond fuck, Brian?
They do live fuck black shows. Guys? They have sex shows all the time.
Where?
Guy in Columbus was telling me that.
But legal.
Yeah, that's not. Yeah, that's like pit bull fight somewhere in someone's basement.
All right.
Yeah.
Now that we've deemed who the champion rooster is.
Yeah, some guy, you know, holding with a hot chick in his arm, holding up a gold bar. I got my money on.
I think they have that, though, in San Francisco legally.
I don't think so. No. They used to have that theater. No.
Mitchell
Brothers Theater.
They do things there. Mm-hmm. They would, like, spit on dildos and shove them in you.
And pee in gloves.
Either way, man, I can't thank you enough for having me on.
Please,
and,
man. You're awesome.
I love talking to you. I love talking to
you, too, man. Please let us promote your gigs. If you have gigs coming up, people want to know about them, and I want to tell them. So let me know anytime you're anywhere. I guarantee you all these people on Twitter, they're saying yes, yes, yes to that right now.
Well, I'll be in San Diego, but when I get back to L.A., if you're doing anything around town, let me know, because I want to come out and just... You know, 5 minutes. I just want to hang out.
Well, we'll do it. You know? Listen, when are you going to be back here again? We'll schedule a show here at the Ice House.
Okay, I'll be here through the whole whatever. We'll work it out, dude.
We'll work it out.
It'll be good.
He doesn't want to commit on air, ladies and gentlemen.
No. It's like I don't even have a schedule.
I understand. Ladies and gentlemen, we got a crazy week coming up. Let me tell you about the dude we got tomorrow.
Oh, I can't wait. He's a robotics guy.
Yes.
He has a bunch of books about robots, like. Pretty much taking over the world and stuff like that.
Yeah. From porn to robotics. Yeah. Wow.
Robotpocalypse, I think. Robopocalypse is... Yeah. Let me get his information here. He's Daniel Wilson. He's a young guy, and he's got a PhD in robotics. And he wrote Robopocalypse, which is a novel about a robotic insurrection against men, basically like a Terminator-type movie that Steven Spielberg is going to turn into a movie. But he's a technology expert. We're going to talk about military robots, privacy issues, artificial intelligence, the future, on how long until we start incorporating robotics technology into our own bodies. It's going to get freaky. So that's tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. And then we'll probably do Eddie Bravo on Wednesday. It's all about when I can set up this. I'm having some work done at the studio. So thank you to Matt Staggs, the official Death Squad publicist, for hooking this up. He's a very cool motherfucker and the host of the Disinfo podcast as well. And he's a publicist, author, very, very cool guy, Matt Staggs. Cool. Is he an author? I don't know. He's an author of emails. His emails are very well written. Thanks to Dave Attell, ladies and gentlemen. Follow him on Twitter, Attell, A-T-T-E-L-L on Twitter. It's @Attell. @Attell or Dave's old porn,
or just old porn on Twitter.
But most importantly, Attell, to send him some love, ladies and gentlemen. Let him know you love him. The guy's he's
at old porn.
His show is fantastic. It's a really, really funny show. I enjoyed doing it. It was fucking really fun.
Thursday,
yeah,
Showtime.
This Thursday on Showtime. Ting, thank you to Ting for sponsoring our podcast. Go to rogan.ting.com and save $50 off any of the Android devices. Some badass phones there. No contracts. Cancel anytime you want. Tell the big boys, these big networks, to go fuck themselves, goddammit. So this weekend we will see you in Montreal. That shit is sold out, you dirty bitches. But there is a Death Squad show, is it here? Friday night?
Friday night here, and then 12-12-12 at the American Comedy Co. in San Diego.
And who is it here? Who's here?
I don't know yet. I'm putting it together right now.
Okay, and 12-12-12, I will likely be there for that, but we don't know yet. Yep. I got a lot of shit going on. Bitches, I'm busy, yo. Thanks to onnit.com. Go to O-N-N-I-T and use the code name Rogan, and you will save 10% off any and all supplements. If you use the code word Sandy, we will take that 10% and donate it to Hurricane Relief. We decided to go with the Salvation Army because we find that in this instance, they are giving 100% of the donations to Hurricane Relief, whereas some of them, it gets down to as low as like 30%. That's kind of important, like when you know how much of your money actually goes not to the infrastructure of the charity, but actually goes to help. Hire-primate.com is my t-shirt company. There's new t-shirts in. This is the monkey gas mask chimp.
By Mike Maxwell.
Yeah, Mike Maxwell did some badass artwork on this. It says Hire Primate, Department of Health and Welfare. And we also have another new one that he just designed that's fucking amazing. I can't wait until that one gets released. And a couple of shirts that he designed that were based on posters for a Chicago gig and Atlanta gig with Joey Diaz and Duncan Trussell. All right, I talk too much. It's official. I'm tired of hearing my own fucking voice, goddammit. Mad love to all you ladies and gentlemen out there in the Twitterverse, in the universe. We appreciate the fuck out of every one of you. All the positive tweets and all the cool people that we meet after shows. It's humbling, it's overwhelming, and it we never get tired of it. We appreciate the fuck out of all of you, and we're doing this for you guys, officially. We will never stop. We will roll on. We will get through this together. Rise, ladies and gentlemen. Rise and evolve. You are not the person you were yesterday. You are a accumulation of your experiences. Be the hero in your own life. I love all you bitches. I'll see you tomorrow.